Okay, we'll go ahead and call the Wednesday, July 27th meeting of the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee to order. With that, then, could you please stand and we'll have the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Mr. Miller, could we have a roll call, please? Why don't you try the other one, Rob, and see if that one.
Testing 1, 2. Okay, we got it. Thank you. Okay, Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Garfinkel.
Here.
Director Zimmer.
Here.
And Chairperson Ohilski.
Present. Okay, with that, then, we'll go ahead and have board member comments. So if we could, we'll just go along the board here. We'll start with Ms.
I have no comments.
I would like to introduce our new alternate for S&T Mutual Water Company, who's here today, Charlie Kotick. Can you just let people see you? He's our new alternate, and he's on the board of S&T Mutual.
Thank you.
I'm sorry?
No, I said thank you. Bruce, you have any comments?
I got nothing.
Okay, I have no comments other than apology for being a few minutes late here. I do apologize for that. So then we'll move to the consent agenda. We have two items on the consent agenda, the approval of the minutes from June 15th and June 30th, and approval of the warrants, budget updates, and invoice register through June 2016. Do we have any questions before we take public comments? Okay, seeing none, then we'll take public comment on the consent agenda, please. Oh, pardon me. Does anybody want to pull an item? Okay. With that, then, we'll go to public comment on the consent agenda. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
Move approval.
Moved by Director Gibson, seconded by...
I second.
Member Garfinkel, so we'll take a roll call. But Rob, give you something to do. How's that?
Sure, absolutely.
Director Gibson
needs more. Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Garfinkel.
Yes.
Director Zimmer.
You know what? I do have one comment on the minutes of June 30th. The start time needs to be corrected on that one. I believe we started early on that meeting, right?
Ah, yes. Thank you.
Sorry, I was.
Pick up.
Are you good with that, Rob?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then the maker of the motion accepts the amendment. The seconder accept the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, we'll take another roll call vote.
Director
the
Gibson.
The motion as amended.
Yeah. Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Garfinkel.
Yes.
Director Zimmer.
Yes.
Chairperson Ohilski.
Yes. Okay, with that, then, we'll move to item number 6, which is the Executive Director's Report. Rob, would you like to go forward with that, please?
Yes, thank you. Many of the key items, of course, are on the agenda today, so a fairly brief report. But there is one important item that I wanted to, actually two that I wanted to bring out. One is that our grant consultant, WSC, is working with the state currently on a pre-application process. The formal application for the first implementation grant is due in the fall, but there's a pre-app that can be submitted to describe all the types of projects that we'd like to pursue funding for, and we are turning in that pre-application to begin that discussion with the state on how to fine-tune our grant approach. So a couple of thoughts on that. One is we, of course, are going as broadly as we can within the parameters of the water quality portions of the grant. The state's communicated that they don't have a lot of background in seawater intrusion-related projects because those are not as easy to get your arms around as, say, a well that's high in a contaminant that you can just treat at the wellhead. So it's a little bit of a different animal for them, but we're giving them a pre-app to begin the discussion and pointing out the other water quality challenges in the basin, whether it's nitrate in the upper aquifer or for the CSD system, our hit on chrome 6 on one of our upper aquifer wells, as well as listing our need for additional monitoring in the pre-app. So pretty much everything that was in the basin plan that we felt could fit, we're going to throw it all in there, and then when the pre-application is accepted and they come back for discussion, that will come to this board to identify things like the actual entity that will go after the final grant application, how it would be structured from a grant perspective, what the source of the match might be if we're able to offer up any match, those types of questions. But at this point, we're in the pre-application stage. With respect to the boundary modification...
Well, wait, Rob, before you go
on.
Yeah,
sure.
We had a discussion when we talked about these grant applications about whether we needed to have a JPA or how we would make, actually, you know, what entity would make the application. Is WSC looking into that, or where do we stand on that?
We certainly told them what our current status is, and the pre-app is written flexibly. Okay. Because it's just that first step. And then when we go to the full application, we'll need to make some final choices, whether the district's the applicant or the flood control district or a JPA at that time.
But that's
time.
Something they're looking at in their analysis as to who the applicants should or
and what
be.
Might position the best. Okay. Some of that will come after the first input that the state will provide on the
pre-app. So we're waiting for the input back from the state first.
Okay. We don't turn that in until later on in the week.
Okay. I just want to make sure that was being it.
I think that's good. Well said.
Okay, now you can move on to the basin boundary request modification.
Great, thank you. And we do have members of county staff here if there are detailed questions because they've been living this over the last number of weeks. And we are not the only basin that's in this neck of the woods. So perhaps as a layperson's background for those in the audience, the basin boundary as defined in the basin plan is smaller than the larger boundary that the state defined years ago. And the primary area where there is a significant difference is that off to the east, as you head towards San Luis Obispo, the state includes a shallow finger of farm fields that have shallow alluvial wells that we've always considered to be managed separately from our basin. So the county presented a boundary modification request along with supporting evidence, and DWR's draft decision, or their initial decision, is to deny that request and keep the basin as is. And I saw a number of letters from the different agencies looking to support the county's efforts to define this basin as indicated in the basin plan, and so that effort continues and will continue, but we're uncertain of the outcome at this point.
Mr. Miller, if I might, I don't see Carolyn Berg or Mark Hutchinson. Wade Horton and Carolyn went up to the California Water Commission meeting last Thursday to directly pitch our case. The CWC is an advisory body to DWR, and I don't know if Kathy has any brief synopsis of the reception that was received there, but they were hopeful that they would get a little traction with the Water Commission to help move DWR on this. And do we have... Did you? I was supposed to get briefed yesterday, and that just didn't happen.
We'll be here till later.
Okay.
But from what I know, DWR will be finalizing the boundary basin modification in September. So that's the latest I know about this.
Okay. Well, with the chair's indulgence, maybe we can.
Yeah, I think when Carolyn gets here, we can bring her up to get her report.
Great. Thanks.
And I just for the record here. I know that Golden State did submit a letter, and then I submitted a letter on behalf of the Basin Management Committee and the Los Osos CSD. So I know...
S&T also submitted a letter.
So we did have a number of letters that were submitted in support of the modification. So when Carolyn gets here, let's just defer this then till Carolyn gets here and she can give us updates since she was there.
Yeah, agreed. I think one issue we'll need to keep in mind is, in terms of grant pursuits, we want to keep a careful eye on whether this could less in some of our right. grant pursuits. So we want to...
So, yeah, so we'll just defer that till... If Carolyn is coming, we'll just defer that till we get here.
She
gets here. She's later than me, so I don't feel so bad now.
I did also want to give a brief update on the creek discharge question. As we indicated last time, that technical report has been submitted to Division of Drinking Water. We did get at least one indication that one of the key reviewers had looked at the report and looked on it favorably, and then he's provided it to his recycled water colleagues and said that within the next 2 weeks we should hear back formally. So hopefully at your next meeting, which is approximately 3 weeks hence, you'll be able to get a more complete update, but we're waiting for that report back from the state. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
The only other question I had was the first item that's on your discussion points here was the annual report. So if you, I assume it was submitted and it was accepted and all that.
So as I indicated here,
I just thought you'd get it for the audience.
Right, it's about 2 weeks out to be complete. We're working with Spencer on we're adding a few maps and doing the modifications we talked about at the meeting. It's still about 2 weeks out.
All right. Yeah. Bill?
How do we propose to distribute the annual report to or the information in the annual report to the community?
The draft is posted on our website, and the final certainly will also be posted on the website. If we want to do something more than that, we could certainly consider a direct mailer or some other form of communication if there's interest in doing that.
I believe it's an important document because right now, unfortunately, we're kind of a unknown here in Los Osos. Many people don't even know what the Basin Management Committee is, so we haven't had any outreach, and certainly we're going to need a lot of that if we're going to get towards going for a vote in 2017.
Agreed.
No, other than the postcard that we sent out.
Or something to the press, you know, a brief press release.
That's something, yeah. We can think about that for next meeting and then maybe finalize how we want to do that for next meeting.
I think that would be a good topic to have in our discussion, yes.
So let's just add that everybody can brainstorm it between now and then we can address it. So any other questions? If it's okay with everybody, I'm going to go ahead and take public comment on everything but the boundary request, because I think I'd like to have Carolyn here before we take public comment on that so we can get, because like Bruce said, her and Wade went up there, so I'd rather defer that public comment on that. So we'll take public comment on the Executive Director's Report, which is the annual report, the grant update, and the follow-up on creek discharge, and we'll defer public comment on the boundary modification until Carolyn gets here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards. Mr. Chairman, I may include at the tail end of my remarks some comments on the boundary adjustment, so I don't have to be coming up again on that. First of all, with regard to the grant pursuit, I'd like to make sure that we do not pursue projects simply because they're grant eligible. Another way to phrase it is grant-driven projects. We've seen that a lot. And for example, I'd hate to see, because of, and as I understand it, this is round one of the Prop 1 funding, with round two coming in the not too distant future. And I'd rather not see us pursue, say, projects like Program B, an $18 million denitrification facility, simply because part of it may be eligible for a grant. Let's pursue good projects that are sound and also will serve us over a long period of time. So that's my biggest concern with regard to the grant pursuit. With regard to the creek discharge, I would ask, is the creek discharge and that project potentially eligible under round two of the Prop 1 funding? And what are the what is the local match for that, and what are the other general provisions? And then with regard to the boundary adjustment, and if I need to come back up, I'm happy to do so, but the DWR Bulletin 118 has established the boundary of our basin. That's what we're working with now. And if DWR is going to take very much longer to make this determination, or if we have to fight very much longer to modify the boundary, to shrink it up as has been proposed. I think we need to drop the boundary adjustment. It's not Los Osos' problem. If the boundary remains as is, pursuant to Bulletin 118, we're good to go. It's not going to slow our progress down one iota. It does create some implications for the county because they have to deal with that land area between our proposed boundary and the current 118 boundary. But again, that's not our problem. Sigma compliance, that's the county's problem. So we've been delayed enough. This is the ninth meeting in 8 months. We cannot afford any more delays. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson, with respect to the annual report, I think it also needs to be on the CSD website. I went into the CSD website to try to find the agenda and the packet for the meeting, and it's not on there. That should be an obvious. I also think that now that these are being taped, another cheap, easy mechanism would be to have the website up on a rider at the beginning of the meeting and maybe at the end of the meeting as it's going off air. Real inexpensive. AGP does that for other meetings. And then it'd be interesting to see what other components you come up with. But I have to admit, it was really tough to find the packet for this meeting today. And it shouldn't be that hard. So,
okay, thank you. Lou?
Lou Tornatsky, Los Osos. A note about grants, and I agree with one of the previous speakers that we shouldn't blithely pursue grant opportunities that have no relationship to what we really want to do. However, this is the time of year when the federal government and the foundations open up their programs for the rest of the year. And the way this rolls out, starting in July and deeply into August, all the federal funding agencies are going to open up their new program and what the opportunities are going to be. Now, you cannot wait until January to respond to those or you're going to be shut out. So we need to be mindful of what those are that have a relationship to what we want to do in terms of the basin plan, and also on the perhaps rarer opportunities that might be presented by national prominent foundations that work in the areas that we're interested in. So this is an important next 6 weeks.
So. Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, I see a certain person has just arrived.
Yes, she has.
We're just going right to... Yes, either way.
Yeah, either way.
We just wanted to get an update on what happened last week since you were there. We're hanging on the edge here, Carolyn.
Okay, yeah. Great. Hi, I'm Carolyn Berg with County Public Works, and thank you for letting me speak a couple minutes later. So I attended the California Water Commission last week in Sacramento with our Public Works Director, Wade Horton, and our basic idea of going there was to present the boundary modification, kind of the importance that it brings in terms of achieving sustainable groundwater management, much like we've talked about with you in the past. And we presented them with all four letters from the agencies that had supported the boundary, along with the draft annual report that your BMC is producing, just to show them the substantial steps that have already been taken in terms of sustainable groundwater management here in the basin. That said, we didn't get a lot of discussion with the California Water Commissioners, and it appears, you know, they're generally appearing to be supportive of DWR staff recommendations, as is. We didn't really have a lot of, actually, we had no questions asked on our reasoning or kind of the general premise of our recommended boundary change. We're hoping we did provide all those written documents to DWR staff as well to provide further support for this boundary change, but The general sense I get is they're sticking to their draft recommendation to deny the boundary modification request, which would leave then the larger basin to need to comply under SGMA. That said, the state isn't finalizing its boundaries until September, so there is still a good, what would that be, a month and a half or so for the state to consider any additional comments. And I know Kathy Martin in our office and I have received several comments or questions from landowners and agencies interested in, you know, still pursuing this boundary change. So I'd say, even though there's no specific public comment period with the state, that it's... I can't see the harm in submitting any additional comments to the Department of Water Resources at this time. I'm not sure that they'll make any further considerations, but I can't see the harm in trying. So we'd be happy to provide anyone with the websites and contact information that's interested in that. Do you guys have any other questions, though? I kind of missed the discussion earlier, so.
No, Rob just gave us an update and said that you and Wade had attended, so we were waiting for you to get here because first-hand observation. So let me ask a question, though. So if, because I know that when Bruce wrote his letter and I wrote my letter on behalf of the Basin Management Committee and the CSD, they were more dealing with the big picture stuff. And then when Golden State wrote, and I haven't seen your letter, I apologize, but when Golden State wrote their letter, it was much, much more into the technical aspects of it. So if we're going to go ahead and submit another letter, which I think we should do, would it be better to go with the more the litigation approach that Bruce and I took or the technical approach? Or how, what type of letter do you think would be most helpful at this point? I know you're saying there's a slim chance, but still.
Maybe a blend of both. I know, you know, at a county department level or staff level, we've been submitting a blend of both pursuing the beneficial management of pursuing this boundary as well as supporting the technical aspects that the state thinks needs more substantial technical information. And Kathy, I don't know if this came up earlier, but Kathy Martin had found that they've updated their draft recommendations on the denial to include several fragment sentences about their reasoning for the denial. I'm hoping that we get more substantial information in writing from the state on maybe specifics of what they need in order to approve the boundary change. But at this point, it's a little... I guess it's not specific what information they would need in order to provide a boundary modification. So a blend in your letters is probably a good idea, both technical and management.
Because I'd like to see us, you know, submit another letter, but I'd like to maybe work with you to make sure that the letter's as powerful or convincing as we can be. So.
Yeah, we'd be happy. We've produced a number of comment letters now at this point on this issue and trying to substantiate with more documentation and technical studies to back this. Okay. And hopefully, if we do receive, supposedly the requesting agencies will receive something in writing from DWR that speaks to that denial. And if we do receive that, we can certainly provide that to each of you. I think that would most likely help the commenting so that you would actually understand and we would understand the specifics of the denial.
Okay. Any other questions before we go to public comment? Yeah.
I'd like to, first of all, I did watch you on the on the computer, and you did a very good job, I think, and I agree. There wasn't much reading of their faces, how they took it. They were pretty just taking information, so I'm hopeful that maybe if they read our letters, that might have some impact on them. But I would ask maybe council, what happens to us or our plans if they don't allow us a boundary modification?
Erica, you're going to take that one?
We can do a blend.
Erica, that's what's going to happen. You see the notebook? That's what's going to happen.
You don't want the notebook.
So if the boundary revision isn't approved, then there will be, as mentioned by one of the commenters, an area subject to SGMA that doesn't fall within the exemption. So the county would need to address whether and how it would want to attempt to cover that area.
And if I could, Ms.
Would you like to add anything? Another perspective is always helpful.
I think the only piece that I would add is
state your name?
Oh, sorry. I'm Jenna Akos, representing Golden State Water Company. So I think the only piece that I would add is that if these areas outside the adjudicated, outside the basin plan, are not covered by the county, they will be considered unmanaged areas, and then the state can step in. And, well, I guess there are two scenarios that I see. One is that the state does nothing, and it decides that they have much bigger problems in the Central Valley and that these areas don't present a problem. And in that case, we end up with a basin that is partially managed. And with that, as you know, Rob sort of touched on earlier, there are potential grant eligibility issues because we would be a partially managed basin. The other option or the other possibility is that the state steps in and designates the entire basin as a probationary basin. And that is a really interesting issue because if you look at sort of the strict regulations, they say that the entire basin would be considered probationary. However, here we have a portion of the basin that is adjudicated and thus exempt from SGMA. So it's really interesting how they would deal with that issue. We don't really know. I mean, I think we could argue that our portion, the basin plan area, would be exempt. But I think that's where we stand right now.
Does that answer your question, Bill, or just leads to more questions?
I guess I'd like to ask whether you can anyway comment how that might affect our ability to raise money for the projects.
All right, one of you three has to answer.
I can speak to that a little bit. As of right now, the plan area in the adjudicated area is consistent with the boundary as we've described, adjusted for parcel lines. So as of right now, I think the BMC going after financing would need to use that particular boundary. They couldn't go outside. Now whether the county or flood control district attempted to do a separate funding district outside, that would be an option.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I don't know. Mark, did you?
No, they were answered. Yeah.
So I've already had preliminary discussions with staff members about what happens if we don't get the boundary modification.
Hold on, Bruce. We have a loose dog here.
Public commenter.
Okay, you can start over. The dog was a slight distraction.
Yeah, total distraction. I lost my train of thought. Some say that derailed long ago. But I've already had some preliminary discussions with our staff. The county has set up a strategy to craft implementation of SGMA on a basin-by-basin basis. I tend to think that the county would need to step in and pick up the role of the GSA, the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, in the area that's not covered by this. I would like to think that dealing with this is not it's not an overwhelming crisis. It's something we got to buckle down and do. It presents some complications. But if that's the final word from DWR, we'll just do it. We'll do what we have to do. The key elements there are the equity of financing of all the basin's necessary plans, the nature of what level, if any, of management needs to be performed in these fringe areas, and all of these decisions would be made with the best interests of the basin as a whole in terms of its financing opportunities and other things. So we've got a sketch of an alternative plan up, a few things we need to discuss further, but it's certainly my commitment. We're not going to let, if this boundary modification doesn't come through, we're not going to let that derail all the good work we're doing. So that's just got to keep on, because we're ahead. And that was the gist of my letter, and a lot of Wade and I talked about it, a lot of our comments is, look how much we've done. You know, we're actually starting to see small signs of success here. We've got a basin that's operating at 80-something percent of its safe yield, and, you know, we made progress here. We got an annual report out. We're doing what Sigma wants us to do. So we're going to keep that going. That's it. The one question I had for Carolyn is I was conflicted. I was hoping that they would quit blathering on about whatever it was that they were in the morning. That's a technical term. So they could get to yours and I could see what it was that they said. I didn't get to observe it. But I guess the question I have for you is, as public works staff have submitted a couple of fairly technical reports, quite technical reports, trying to flesh out the rationale for our request, do you feel you're still engaged in a discussion with DWR staff? I mean, are they considering, or have they hardened up and they're just done?
Maybe more of a one-sided. They're listening, but I don't have the sense that they're really at the point of wanting to change their modification request. Their presentation really focused on that they feel they have substantial reasons.
Statewide consistency reasons that they do. Okay, so I mean, we'll talk offline about that, but we'll, like I say, we'll get this taken care of. This is not the biggest problem we have in front of us. So.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we'll go to public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Jeff Edwards, again, briefly. It isn't a big deal, and that's why I would ask your committee to take an action now that if the boundary adjustment is not approved by whatever the date is in September, that you drop it so that we've done this in advance so there's no more resources committed to this endeavor. And frankly, with all due respect to Supervisor Gibson, we have met 9 times. We really haven't done very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments on this issue? Lynette?
Are we on the basin management?
Yes. Boundary.
Okay. The boundary thing? I think I'll wait then.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other comments?
My name is Janice O'Dell, and I'm part of the fringe part that we don't want to be included in the basin. So with all due respect, it's a big deal for those of us that are trying to be excluded. We don't understand how you can manage us very well. Our water doesn't flow into yours. So anyway, I just want to express that some of us have huge concerns, and this means a very big deal to us.
Thank you.
If I might respond specifically.
Well, let's see if we get any other. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. Yes, Bruce.
As we go along, I just wanted to assure Ms. Adele, we're going to start some outreach to everybody who might be affected by this, and we'll work with you. We'll work through this. I think it's a solvable problem that is not going to be unduly burdensome to you. So we'll engage on this.
Yeah.
It's always possible.
Well, for what it's worth, Bruce, I don't think it's a problem. I think it's more of an issue, quite frankly. I just think it's something that can be resolved without a great deal of effort. So I think it's just, for lack of a better term, almost a technicality at this point. So I think if it's okay with the board, then I'll work with I'll work with Carolyn and Wade and whoever else is the appropriate party to go ahead and draft another letter to send sometime within the next few weeks. I did send a letter on our behalf before, but I think, and I did watch the hearing, and I have to say they were totally disengaged. I mean, that's the way I saw it anyway. They just, it was like blank faces, for lack of a better term. So if it's okay with the commission or the committee, I'll go ahead and work with staff to draft another letter. And if the various agencies want to draft their own letters too, I think that would be helpful. And once I get the letter drafted with Carolyn and staff, I'll circulate it for your guys' comment. I don't want to do a Brown Act violation, but if you respond to me individually, we can do it that way.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I could, just one response to public comment. There was a question on the grant eligibility of the creek discharge under round two, and I think it would be a candidate for round two, and the match is approximately 50%, though flexible if it benefits some disadvantaged areas. So,
yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, no, I thought that was a good report, and we got a good update. It's not the results that we had hoped for, but it's what we, I think, anticipated. So, with that, then, we'll move to action item 7A, the alternatives for Basin Management Committee input for the Los Osos Community Plan. I know that Carrie's here, too, so she's here to get firsthand observation of that, isn't she? Yes, I see her now. She's hiding behind Ray.
If we can get the laptop to wake up here, it's giving me this spinning icon of impatience.
I guess our previous discussion just put it to sleep, deep sleep here.
Bear with me for a minute while I do the control alt.
We can. I'll do a time filler while you're waiting. How's that, Rob? While you're doing that, I should have brought this up during my comments, but let me just lay this out to you, Rob. While you're doing that, no, you can keep doing that. I just noticed that in discussions with contractors, as far as doing my lateral connection, I'm just not sure this clean and seal has still gotten across, because three of the contractors I talked to all wanted to slurry seal my septic tank. So I don't know if there's any further outreach we can do to get this clean and seal across to the contractors, but I was just shocked at the responses I was getting from the contractors. So
that's interesting. There is an item on the agenda where we can.
Yeah, well, I was just trying to fill some time here.
That's good. Okay, we're going to go ahead and reboot the computer, but I can speak.
Well, we got to do something right
while we do that. So this is an item that we wanted to take before the committee and the public as a true discussion item. No actions being recommended today. In fact, the item certainly over time could have a lot of public interest, some controversy, so we wanted to make sure that we took the time to look at the different aspects of it. So the item before us is the Basin Committee's input into the Los Osos Community Plan as it relates to future development. We touched on this a little bit when we talked about Chapter 10, the Adaptive Management Plan. In fact, we came up with some language there in Chapter 10 that I'll read here because it's not on the screen yet, where we said the BMC plans to provide input into the Los Osos Community Plan, including consideration of basin metrics and defined goals as they relate to the timing of future growth. So clearly, having lived through a moratorium on the sewer side since 1988, if I'm getting my dates correct, this issue is one that can generate a lot of input. So today we wanted to bring forward with a range of potential alternatives that could be used to discuss, enhance our discussions. These alternatives are something that staff has put together that hopefully provide some bookends to the issue and a range of perspectives. That being said, they do not represent all the alternatives, and there certainly could be hybrid options to discuss, which is why we didn't ask you to take any action today. But we would appreciate some substantive feedback and lively discussion from the public as we look to bring this back at a future meeting, probably the next meeting, because there is some need to respond timely, as Carrie Brown's in the audience here, she can indicate. Thank you so much. So just to remind folks why this is such a critical issue, because under the conditions of the Los Osos Wastewater Project Coastal Development Permit, we have to satisfy this crafted language, which is that wastewater service to undeveloped properties, which of course is the vast majority of the undeveloped properties, are inside the prohibition zone of the community. shall be prohibited unless and until the Estero Area Plan, which is now the Los Osos Community Plan, is amended to identify, and I have the underlining as mine, just so we can all focus on it, appropriate and sustainable build-out limits and any appropriate mechanisms to stay within those limits based on conclusive evidence indicating that adequate water is available to support development of such properties without adverse impacts to ground and surface waters, including wetlands and related habitat. So you have all these key words that, of course, are left to the future to define them, and having this committee at least provide some input into those definitions, I think, would be helpful. At our last meeting, I think it was Director Gibson had mentioned that SGMA may have some language that could help define these adverse impacts, and so I pulled it out of SGMA and listed it here for your consideration as to what an undesirable result using the same language that SGMA uses would mean. So chronic lowering of groundwater levels, not an issue for us who are in a coastal basin because seawater comes in. Significant and unreasonable reduction of groundwater storage, certainly that's an issue for us, usable storage. There is significant and unreasonable seawater intrusion, we certainly have that. Significant and unreasonable degraded water quality. Land subsidence that substantially interferes with surface land uses and depletions of interconnected surface water. So we do have some language in SGMA that would define those undesirable benefits. And really in the bottom line, they're not significantly, remind me later, they're not significantly different from the considerations that are in the basin plan where we're looking to achieve 80% of our sustainable yield as our annual production goal in order to push seawater intrusion the front back out towards the ocean. So with that, some of the alternatives that staff has assembled in there, there are four of them. And I'll go through each one and then at the end be happy to receive some comments. So alternative one, allow further development only after the chloride metric and the water level metric have met basin plan goals for a period of 2 consecutive years, and then restrict the growth rate to a value recommended by the committee at the time. So I would call this one of the more conservative alternatives. As you know, the water level metric will be the first to recover, and there is a trend that shows that it is in the process of recovering. The chloride metric is a lagging indicator. Once water levels have recovered, we do expect chlorides to improve, and that one is going to take some more time.
Rob, for those, I mean, the committee members are familiar with those terminology, but just for the public and people that might be watching, could you just clarify or what the chloride metric and the water level metric are, just define them so they understand exactly what we're talking about?
I think that's
there.
A very good idea. So the chloride metric is essentially a measurement using some averaging of what the chloride or salt level is in our lower aquifer. Wells were chosen that are very sensitive to seawater intrusion because they exist near the seawater front. And so that's a metric that defines how we're doing in terms of physically measuring actual seawater intrusion. The water level metric defines an average water level, again, within our lower aquifer. And that's a metric that, while it's not a direct measurement of seawater intrusion, in order to prevent or push back seawater intrusion, you have to have safe water levels that are well above sea level. The deeper you are, the more water you need to push that denser seawater out. And so this metric is intended to reflect water levels in our lower aquifer compared to a safe level. So for both of these metrics, we have targets that we want to meet. And we're some distance away from those targets in both counts.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So alternative two, allow development subject to Title 19 water conservation retrofit requirements. Just to editorialize this a little bit, Title 19 is an existing county ordinance that requires that you offset your new water use if you're looking to develop a property by retrofitting existing uses. So allow development subject to Title 19, but only after the following conditions are met. The water level metric meets the basin plan goal for a period of 2 full years. Then the chloride metric displays a clear improvement trend over the same 2-year period in the direction of the discretion of the BMC, and then restrict the growth rate to a value to be determined. So this is slightly less conservative than the last alternative, because it allows for some level of development when the water level metric meets the goal. Chloride metric is showing a trend towards improvement over those 2 years, but we haven't yet met it. So this is an intermediate step. Alternative 3, allow development subject to Title 19 water conservation retrofit requirements, but require new development to incrementally implement Program B, such that all new water supply requirements are met from the upper aquifer. Also, restrict the growth rate again to a value to be determined, and link allowable growth with some new upper aquifer metric designed to protect Zone C, or that upper aquifer zone, from seawater intrusion. That's a lot of words that make perfect sense to me. But it essentially says that if there's to be development, it needs to focus all of its water supply on the upper aquifer, where there is currently no evidence of seawater intrusion, and fully fund that program sufficient for development. But that there should be some additional metric, as we talked about in Chapter 10, and we'll be coming back before you, to make sure we don't have seawater intrusion show up in our upper zone, also known as Zone C. So this Alternative 3 basically avoids the lower aquifer. Alternative 4, I guess you could call it the least restrictive alternative, allow development subject to Title 19, but only after the successful implementation of a fee program that would provide funds sufficient for the implementation of Program B or Program C project adequate to supply the needs of approved development. So this would be if the dollars are dedicated such that the project is fully funded or at some level of completion, then you could allow development to proceed. Restrict the issuance of building permits until such improvements are complete and functioning, and limit the growth rate again to a value to be recommended. Four alternatives, could be hybrids, could be others, but this is to really start the discussion.
I have one question before I go out. When you're talking about implementation of a fee program, again, this is for clarification to the public, and et cetera. What we're really talking about is an assessment on the undeveloped parcels.
That's one example of a fee program.
Right.
A special benefit type assessment.
Right.
There are others that could be.
But, I mean, it would be, I guess the point I'm trying to get at, it would be restricted to the undeveloped properties. It wouldn't be something that the basin at large would be involved in. It would
right.
only be the undeveloped parcels that would be.
That's the intent of that alternative.
No, I just want to make it clear. I understand that, and I think we understand. I want to make it clear to the public that if undeveloped parcels are allowed to move forward, it would be totally on their back, the cost of that. It wouldn't be shared by the basin at large.
Right, that's the intent.
Okay, yeah. Bill?
I have a question first. Is allowing development, when you say allow development, is this opening a floodgate to have development, or can the county parcel out parcels of to be developed over a given period of time?
Do we want to bring Carrie up so she can?
Yeah, Carrie, feel free to join and
come and have a seat, because you might be here for a while.
And if you want to sit, yeah.
No, Carrie, I think that if, you know, the question, no, you can stay up there, but I think, or come over here, but I think questions specific to the county, rather than have Rob answer them, since you're here, I'd rather have you answer them directly.
So we have, the county does have a growth management ordinance, and we have an existing allocation list for Los Osos, so it is possible that we could slowly meter out building permits or for new development, you know, 20 at a time, or, you know, that type of thing. Right.
Okay, that's what I there's just been so many properties bought around Los Osos over the course of many, many years, going back to the late 60s and 70s, that people bought with the hope of retiring in Los Osos. Many people did. And unfortunately, when the moratorium came aboard, it put a real cap on that, and many of those property owners have passed away, actually, without ever having been able to develop their properties. And these are individual properties for individual property owners, which I think got hit the hardest with that, because it was their whole hope for their future. So I would kind of lean towards alternative two, which is gives the Basin Management Committee some ability to say, yes, I think it's working, and with the evidence that we get over a 2-year period, that we should look at that one, and then also put a time frame on it. So, but if you can parcel the permits of X amount at a time, that would also accomplish the same thing of seeing how the effect of these new developments has on the water levels and the chloride metric, whether it starts changing when building goes up.
Thank you, Bill. Let me just make one clarification for, again, I'm trying to help our public who haven't been actively involved in this, but condition 6 is a coastal development permit condition, and whatever we recommend, remember, is going to have to be approved by the Coastal Commission. So they're, I guess, the final say in this, for lack of a better term.
And we'll go through our own county planning commission also,
and board
of supervisors.
Right.
So all three levels.
Well, that's, I think Bill addressed that in his question, but I also wanted to lay out that there was the ultimate arbiter or designer of this was actually the Coastal Commission. So we may agree, the county may agree, but the Coastal Commission has the ultimate say in that. So do we have any other questions before we go to public comment? Yeah, Mark.
Yeah. No, this is a good starting point, and many of the alternatives or the actions for these alternatives, you know, I think we could develop a hybrid where we take some of portions of each of these. You know, I think we definitely need to look at alternative two. You know, at least I'm in favor of starting at that point, and then how we do the assessment fee from alternative four. I think that needs to be a key component. One of the questions when I first looked at this, and I think it was because of our reduced production, but when we look at the Basin Management Plan, we look at programs D as for future growth and development, and we don't really mention that here. Programs B and C were going to be part of the existing community. So, you know, I like the development fee for implementing these the programs in B and C, but overall we need to look at the Basin Management Plan and really try to tie that in, because that's where our contribution of the three areas is going to be. So,
yeah, I think it's worth just a quick mention of program D as in dog, that some of the volumes, and I made mention of this in the staff note but not in my verbal presentation, some of the volumes necessary for build-out that were contemplated in the Basin Plan bear revisiting also, just because we've far exceeded the reduction levels, which means in the future the water needed for build-out is going to be a smaller number. But I think it is important to keep Program D on the table, even if Program B would be sufficient. I think that's a good comment.
And you know, hopefully we see the results of that faster, that now that our production is less than what we predicted when we were developing the plan. So hopefully we'll see the results of that.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I might just offer a couple of observations as we think about these, and we may hear some of this in public comment, but you'll recall that the Title 19 water conservation retrofit requirements are a retrofit-to-build issue, and what we've been finding is that the number of unretrofitted homes over the basin is diminishing to probably less than practicable levels. We're not sure, but it's first count was 400 targets, and I'm guessing there's many, many fewer than that. And so, as a alternative, relying on Title 19 conservation retrofit to build is probably not going to be a likely source of offset here. Similarly, if you look at condition of approval 6, you'll see it speaks to having conclusive evidence of sustainable water supply. And as much as I would like to think that money in the bank constitutes conclusive evidence of something, I don't think that's probably going to be very persuasive to the Coastal Commission. As we indicated, we're offering our input to the county's process, which then goes through a number of stages ending up at the Coastal Commission. So I do know that new development has got to pay its fair share of all the infrastructure that it takes advantage of when it comes in. It will pay road impact fees. It will pick up its share of the sewer system. It will also be assessed for its share of the water supply enhancements. So, the money will be exacted and as appropriate. And then there was one more thing. Oh, the county does have a growth management ordinance, as indicated. It's based on, it's not actually part of our local coastal program, which is important because it allows us to have much more flexible control over growth management countywide. I think that in this case is a good thing. But what it will require of us is a very close coordination of the activities of the BMC with the county's resource management system, which is the data set upon which we roll over to set growth rates. And again, I think a rational, well-supported analysis will come up with a growth rate that's going to be part of the deal, because it loops back around, the other connection being the Basin Management Committee's commitment to adaptive management. So we have to have a system in place that allows us to execute our adaptive management. So I think growth rate will certainly be appropriately moderated.
Yep. Okay. All right. So with that, then, we'll go to public comment on this item.
Item 7B. Or, pardon me, 7A, my mistake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards. And thank you, Rob, for the write-up and the presentation. Notwithstanding the fairly recent basin management plan and the fairly recent community plan, the scale of all of our demand and supply characteristics have changed. For example, in the base or in the community plan, most of the water discussion is under Appendix E2. And under the projected water supply, they anticipate a safe yield of about 4,170 acre-feet per year. We know now that 3,000 acre-feet per year should result at an 80 basin yield metric, results in a 2,400 acre-foot per year demand, potential demand. And another aspect is the groundwater production, and again, the community plan, it talks about it being at 2,450, that is the sustainable yield. But now we know that our demand is barely over 2,000 acre feet per year, all things considered, including agriculture. So clearly, the scale of things have changed, and I would like to encourage your committee to consider a hybrid of alternatives 2 and 4. In Mr. Miller's presentation. And again, with all due respect to Supervisor Gibson, The Title 19 retrofit to build program is entirely viable. It's been viable, it's viable today, and it can be viable going into the future. I can tell you, there are thousands, literally thousands of 1.6 gallon per flush toilets in our community. The state of the art is half of that. That represents any right around 100 acre feet per year, just changing out all the 1.6 gallon per flush toilets. 100 acre feet. That represents about half of the demand from all future build out in the community at 200 acre feet per year. That's very close to what the entire build out will take in terms of additional water demand. We can save half of that by changing out the 1.6 gallon per flush toilets. If we look at shower heads, tankless water heaters, hot water recirculation pumps, we can easily get to the 150 acre feet per year in terms of conservation. This is real savings. This is demonstrable to the Coastal Commission. So I would, again, urge your committee to look at a couple of these. Clearly, 2 and 4 look like viable alternatives. And absolutely, retain Title 19. I think there's another agenda item that we'll talk about conservation, and I'll have some more comments about that. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Patrick McGibney, Baywood Park. I'd like to disagree with our previous speaker. Title 19 is not sustainable, and it hasn't proven itself to be sustainable. And whether we have Title 19 or not, I'd like to bring you to the language in Condition 6 again and focus in where it says that future development must be based on conclusive evidence indicating that adequate water is available to support development of such properties without adverse impacts to groundwater, surface water, including wetlands and all related habitats. So regardless of whether we have 19 or not in the mix, we still have to make sure that we have metrics that will absolutely show that we have conclusive evidence that we are ready for development again. So I would encourage you actually to adopt the most restrictive at this point, and that would be number one, and you might even make it more so. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy.
Lindy Owen, good afternoon. I, too, believe that we need the most restrictive. I think alternative one is the only way that we're going to get through drought conditions, which we have no idea how much longer they're going to be. The evaporation level of a lot of stuff, you know, that doesn't affect indoors, but it does affect outdoors. And so I had a couple of questions. When you look at alternative three and you say that that the new development would incrementally implement program B, I don't see, are we talking like if 10 houses came in, are you trying to say that everybody in the undeveloped properties would have to sign on and then hold their breath to see if it takes 20 years to develop? Program B is expensive, and I can't see 10 households having enough money to pay for all the other permits. So I'm just, to me, that seems kind of doesn't make sense. I don't see anybody having that kind of money to individually fund a whole program. I wanted to ask, too, is this definitely affecting the inside and outside of the prohibition zone? Because currently, outside of the prohibition zone has free rein to build houses and tap into this water that we're losing. And again, I still question why we don't discuss ag wells and their influence on the basin use. I see people abusing ag wells, and there's no limit to how much they can take. So with us not being able to monitor them, and the county is supposedly going to monitor new wells, but it doesn't mean that the abuse of the wells couldn't put a huge dent in how much we're trying to preserve by, you know, people that are the residential use is up against the fact that they can continue using anything, any amount that they want. So I think that needs to kind of fall in, though that isn't necessarily part of our community plan, but it is a big part of the overall picture. So that was it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindy.
Hi, my apologies for being new to this stuff, but I think...
Could you state your name for the record?
Janice O'Dell.
Thank you.
Alternative 3 and by derivation, alternative 4, looks like that you can develop until the upper basin shows the declining limits of the water supply and saltwater intrusion. And so that basically you can keep developing until the upper basin water, who's outside of the proposed plan, is the one that's damaged. Do I understand that correctly? Alternative 3?
He'll answer questions at the end.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's what it seems. I just don't understand that. And alternative 4 is a derivation of that. And then, of course, my opinion would be I'd vote for alternative 1. Because it's not arbitrary. Alternative 2 is arbitrary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson. It almost sounds like Bruce is pushing for or advocating for 1 if you take Title 19 out of the other 3. Alternative 4, I think, is confusing. The language that says successful implementation of a fee program that would provide funds sufficient for the implementation of A, Program B, or Program C project adequate to supply the needs of approved development. So is there going to be a follow-up on this, on what the approved list of projects would be, what the funding requirement in total would have to be, and how long those people would have to wait for that funding to be accumulated to complete that project? This language almost sounds like this is maybe the most restrictive alternative to get through all those hoops. I think there's some clarification that needs to be added there. This condition is very restrictive. And I think when you get to the Coastal Commission, based on the history of Los Osos and opening up development in the 80s to 11 to 1300, whatever the number was exactly, homes being built, that have led over time to our current situation. If those homes weren't here now, it'd be interesting to see where we are. But there's still an underlying factor here that seawater intrusion is still the issue. And how much of any of these alternatives is going to lead to stopping seawater intrusion, not slowing it down, not from 60 feet inland a year to 40 feet inland a year. That may be slowing the trend, but it's not pushing back. You still have seawater intrusion moving inland. And I still have said this, and you've heard me numerous times, Rob, over the years say, I still don't think we know where that number is. And we've had tremendous reduction in consumption in this community. The CSD, for example, is pumping less than half of what they did when the district was formed 17 years ago, 18 years ago. There needs to be some additional clarification before you bring all these back on, you know, how this is all going to be developed and how many homes would need to participate in all these funding sources in order to get any of the programs done. But it all has to be together. And Title 19, I agree with Bruce, there's very little substantial savings still out there in the way of toilets. Showerheads, people are replacing them with alternatives already. I see it all the time.
Okay. Thank you. Time's up. Okay. I don't have a timer. I mean, we don't. I have a timer, but we don't have the lights up there. Is what I was trying to say. Yes. Next.
My name is Lynn Sterner. I live in a home here in Los Hills that has been owned by the family for almost 40 years. And we are new to following all this. And my only comment is I don't see how this addresses all the sacrifices that those of us who live in Los Hosos are making currently in order to bring this balance about. Spending money on water tanks, diverting water out of our house to water our landscaping, letting our landscaping die, taking bucket showers, not taking as many showers, saving every drop that we can in our house to balance the basin. So are we to continue doing this indefinitely so that you can build more houses?
Thank you. Chuck, anybody after Chuck? Otherwise, I'm going to close public comment. Okay, Chuck will be our last public commenter then.
Good afternoon, committee. I'm Chuck Cicinia, speaking as a resident of Los Osos. I know you're going to think I'm sick, but I think I agree with two things that Bruce said. One, that money in the bank is not water in the ground. And another is that Title 19 opportunities seem pretty limited, unless there's some major changes to that program. So it almost sounds like one is maybe the only feasible option here. Four makes me nervous, again, because once improvements are complete, building permits get issued. Well, that kind of assumes that the improvements have led to the desired results. And that's why I like the most conservative option, because you have specific metrics. Alternative two talks about a clear improvement trend. I'm not really sure what an improvement trend is. That means that the salt water's not coming in as fast. Again, we need to stop it, not just slow it down. And as Mr. Margetson pointed out, there are a lot of complications with some of the alternative three and four. I like the clarity of one. If Title 19 doesn't provide us opportunities, maybe it's time to put more money at repurposing the septic tanks or do what we can to conserve water. And it is a tough issue because we're here being asked to sacrifice with some of our lifestyle so that other people can move to the area perhaps. But that's fair too. I mean, people have had lots here for a long time. And it's one of those things that we all have to work on together here. I really haven't seen much of an effect in lifestyle just from water conservation. It's just something we should be doing, but I like number one.
Thank you. We do have another commenter.
My name is Emily Ewer. I'm with Oasis Associates. Based off of the conversation, a lot of the retrofit programs and new development has been focused on potential of residential development, which is probably rightly so. However, to keep in mind that there is people out there who want to develop commercially, and whether that is treated differently or treated the same, how that program rolls out for commercial development is something to consider as well.
Good point. Any other speaker? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close it and bring it back. Rob, would you like to answer the questions and then to the best of your ability. I would like to, just before you get into that, just restate something that we've talked about. There is a process involved. It's going to involve the Planning Commission. It's going to involve the Board of Supervisors and ultimately the Coastal Commission. And how the terminology gets interpreted is really going to be up to the Coastal Commission. I mean, we've talked for literally years about how that would be interpreted, what conclusive evidence means. And until we actually have something before the commission, it's speculative at best. So with that, I'll turn.
Could I add on to that, Mr. Chairman? I think even more clearly, what we're being asked to do, not today, presumably perhaps next month, is to provide recommendations to the county planning department so they can incorporate that into their draft of the community plan, which then goes through the county process to decision. And because new growth hinges on a couple of things, one of which is the water supply that this committee is directly involved in, county very much wants to get our committee's input on that. But again, these are recommendations. So I think it's important to understand what it is exactly we're doing here. And I don't know whether you have a number of responses or a few, but after that, we've got thoughts here.
See, I do. We all have some thoughts, I'm sure. But if Rob, you and Carrie want to respond, coordinate your responses. How's that?
Sure. I'll focus more on the water technical aspects, but always appreciate the clarity that comes from an initial discussion on these types of matters, because it certainly does raise matters that I haven't considered. From Lindy, she talked about Program B, and others did also. How would that be achievable on a small scale? Didn't want to spend a lot of time developing that if that alternative was not going to go very far. If it looks like there's some interest in that, we could talk about phasing in of certain facilities. There might be a core initial phase and then have a scalable nitrate removal system. There are other technologies that are scalable. Is it at a 10 lot at a time scale? Probably not, but it certainly can be further developed. But I don't have that clarity here today to tell you exactly what those numbers are and how it will work. But we could develop that if there's some interest. She asked about inside and outside the prohibition zone, which I think is actually a very good discussion to have. I'm focused on Special Condition 6 here, but I think at some point as we bring this back under adaptive management, broadening the discussion to talk about areas outside the prohibition zone I think is smart. Ms. O'Dell was asking about the upper basin, whether that was going to be allowed to be pumped to the point where seawater intrusion was occurring. My intent in alternative 3 was to provide some language saying we need a metric in the upper aquifer that says, okay, we're going to keep a 20% buffer or whatever we jointly determine so that we don't find ourselves in the same place that our current lower aquifer is. But I think it was very astute of her to bring that up. And Richard talked about an approved list of projects. I touched on that a little bit. I think we'd need to further develop that to make that clear. And those were some of the substantive items I wanted to speak to.
Carrie, do you have any response at this point?
I just wanted to make one comment that, you know, the planning department has been in talk. We have been talking to the Coastal Commission. We're not just going to wait till it's all done and submit it to them. And they have indicated to us that they want to see basin metrics as a way of making that determination. So I just thought I would add
that. I wasn't implying that you were operating in the dark. I apologize for that. Okay, so let's bring it back for discussion. I'm just going to start off with one comment, not a detailed comment, but I think that one of the things when we talk through this we need to talk about and just consider, and the issue I have with alternative one is when we talk about a two-year period of time, we could talk about a two-year period of time that's an anomaly, and that's my concern. If we just say a strict two-year period of time, because we could have two-year period of time where it rains out of control for 2 years and we get metrics that change, or we could have a two-year period of time where there's no rainfall, et cetera. So, you know, I sort of just am siding with a blend right now, but I just wanted to lay that out, the anomaly thought, because that's something we've been dealing with over the past few years. Okay, so who wants to start with?
I'll go ahead and start. So we looked at four alternatives, but really there's many more components that could be added to this. And I think maybe an approach we should consider would be we list the goals and requirements and develop a matrix of feasibility and impacts. And that would be something that we would present to the Planning Commission or the Coastal Commission and the Planning Department. So, you know, from some of the public comment, you know, they do have good suggestions that maybe we could open those list, just the big, broad brainstorming list, open that up to the public somehow to get their input on it. We come back and we look at this list and see how it pertains to our sector of the Basin Management Committee and what we can add to develop a matrix, and then we move forward that way with it, and that's how we present it. So That was just my overall assessment of what you know. I like some of the stuff that you have in here. It's good, but I don't think it's an all-inclusive list that we could develop.
No, I think that's a good comment, Bill.
I agree with your comments about a two-year window there. It can be distort our findings. However, we have to also say that we've been in a drought for these last 2 years, and we know we have. And we, in our last testing, we did see some improvement. I'm not sure that all of the conservation efforts that have been made to date have been reflected in our basin at this point. So I think we are making some progress on that. I know when I look around, especially in our S&T district, there's only a handful of properties, probably less than 10, who have not gone to either letting their grounds just dry up or have put in a very good water-saving landscaping. So we do need to see those results over a longer period of time. But then on the other side, and which was really a lot of a discussion at the commission meeting, the discussion of the change in the environmental change, what might be going on. And right now, all the indications are is it's getting worse real fast. If you look at every month for the last 15 months has broken records, the previous records, and he just still goes. So all of these have to be subject to some kind of input from climate change and how that is showing up. And so I would still like to go towards alternative two, which because I think the chloride metric might take an awful long time for it to be reversed. But if we just see that if it's stopping, then we can know that we have some improvement going on.
Thank you, Bill. Bruce?
Yeah. I don't envy Carrie her job on any given day, but as she puts together the water supply side of this LCP update, she's going to have to, we, the county, working through her leadership, is going to have to substantiate that there's water to supply sustainable to provide for the number of existing and new developments that are going to be expressed in the community plan. I think one of the and in doing so, she's naturally going to reference our basin management plan. That's the foundation. But what we have to do, I think, is make the case very clearly within the LCP that the basin management plan is the sustainable water supply with conclusive evidence that the Coastal Commission references in this particular condition of the wastewater project. And know that that's just a condition of the wastewater project. There's actually a bigger issue of substantiating the potential future growth and sustaining the existing growth in Los Osos that you have to do. I think one important case to be made is that to what extent we are into the SGMA process, we have or certainly will have a SGMA compliant management of this basin. That puts it, I think, the Coastal Commission on notice that we are complying with the fundamental issue of sustainability. And I think there's a policy discussion. I know colleagues up and down the coast are starting to think about this, but how should the Coastal Commission react to SGMA? I mean, in theory, they should accept a SGMA-compliant basin management plan as proof you got a sustainable water supply. It won't be that simple, but I think we need to make the case that this is operating under SGMA. So that, in terms of recommendations and how we craft the LCP amendment, I think that that's good. They absolutely are going to want to see our metrics. And I think that we point out further that our basin management plan is based on adaptive management, which naturally speaks to the need for a reasonable growth rate so we can execute what we need to do in the adaptive management. I think that we should, when we craft an alternative, I think it will end up to be somewhat of a hybrid of these different ones. But I think we should put forward the proposition that if we see a confirmed trend in a particular metric, that we should be able to accommodate new development within that confirmed trend, as long as our basic basin metrics are in the right place. If you see what I'm saying, I don't think it's necessary for us to, you know, absolutely hit any specific targets, which are in fact somewhat arbitrary. But if we see we're headed in the right direction, we should ask for some accommodation of development under a confirmed trend. And I think in that that we would like to consider at least the question of water offsets. And so you think about what Title 19 is. It's a way of accommodating growth within existing water supply by retrofitting to build. I didn't say it was dead. I just said we shouldn't over rely on the retrofit to build provisions. And the actual use of water from the upper aquifer as an offset is another kind of water offset. Get to the extent that it doesn't create seawater intrusion in the upper aquifer, if we can shift supply into the upper aquifer, it reduces the problem of seawater in the lower aquifer. So my thought, and just again, and this is in broad principle kind of brush strokes, that we should put forward the idea that confirmed trends based on the metrics are should be considered for accommodating some level of growth, and that water offsets, whether it's retrofit to build or upper aquifer water, should be considered as other ways in which some amount of growth can be accommodated. And how we flesh that out and exactly what the words look like when we get back to considering this, I think, is what we're considering over the next month.
Right. Okay. I think we've had some good comments from the committee and from the public. I really like Mark's comment about coming up with a matrix, because I think that would really be helpful as we go through the process to come up with what our proposal would be, to actually be able to look at how these various components fit into the various alternatives. So I think the matrix was a good idea. I mean, I'm sort of tending to a combination of 2 and 3, because I think that the metrics in 2 are important, but I also think the having the undeveloped lots participate in implementing program B is important. So I think that, you know, that's where I'm coming down, somewhere of a melding of 2 and 3. But I think that the matrix was really a good idea. And I know what we're looking for today is just direction to staff to come back with us, or pardon me, to us at our next meeting. I think you've got some good direction. Unless somebody else has some further comments, we'll just let Rob and Carrie work on it and come back to us next month. Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. Okay. Last item, Rob. Oh, you have a comment?
There's 2 more items.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I was in a hurry.
It's a long meeting today. I'm sorry.
7B, the finance report.
Yeah.
We have 7B, the presentation and discussion of the Phase 1 finance plan report for the groundwater basin.
I would ask our team if they need a little break to get ready for a PowerPoint, maybe a 3-minute break, Mr. Chair. You need a little break to boot it up.
You got a break to set it up? Okay, we'll take a 5-minute break. How's that? Okay, we're going to go ahead and get back in session here. Bruce. Okay. All right, so we'll get back in session here. So we're on item 7B, the presentation and discussion of the Phase 1 financing plan report for the basin. Carolyn, we'll turn it over to you.
Great, thank you. Okay, again, I'm Carolyn Berg with the County Public Works Department, and I'm just going to give a really brief introduction and then let Nate take it away, since he's the brains behind this. As a quick reminder, under the stipulated judgment, it was envisioned that the flood control district could form a zone of benefit and pursue a funding mechanism that would cover the administrative costs and other appropriate costs within the basin management plan. And so that was kind of the starting point of looking at this finance study. But in past discussions with the BMC, there was also discussion of wanting to understand, maybe a larger concept of funding mechanisms available as other programs were rolled out and sought for initial funding. So that's what this Phase 1 finance plan was, really to just give an overview of different funding mechanisms, talk about pros and cons of the different ones, and what sorts of efforts could be funded under any of these given mechanisms. And then beyond that, also looking at who would be appropriate sponsoring entities. There are all these individual entities, as well as the BMC, depending on how it ultimately becomes formed. So our staff report kind of covers that briefly, and I just wanted to give a little overview of the timing. So, of course, timing is of the essence on this if we're going to be pursuing a near-term funding mechanism. We've talked in the past about a potential May 2017 mail ballot election date for a Prop 218 vote. If we decide to pursue one of the options and stick to that election date, we'll need to move forward quickly. However, on the flip side of that, this is a very complex issue, and so we wanted to give the BMC time to really digest the report, give us feedback today, ask Nate and his team questions, and then be able to come back to you next month to answer any of those as needed. So today our intent is to present this to you, have this discussion, and then we'll come back next month and see if we get any direction from you at that point. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Nate Perez, and he and his team really did quite a bit of work on behalf of the BMC, and I will note that they also did it at a discounted rate because they were so interested in really being involved in this project, and so I think that's quite beneficial that they stuck within your budget you'd outlined at the beginning of the year. Anyways, thank you, Nate.
Wow. Yeah. That is true. Good afternoon. Nate Perez with David's Housing and Associates, Managing Director. Also an attorney, but I will say this is complicated. This is incredibly complicated. It's been very, very interesting, and a lot of folks, audience members and residents, a lot of familiarity. You can just tell it. I mean, this is, reminds me of council meetings in Palo Alto and Davis. This has just been fascinating, and I feel like we've gotten there with the deep dive, but, it was... It took a couple months, but we're happy to be here. So, again, this is just the Phase 1. That sort of indicates that there will be a Phase 2, or at least a discussion of a Phase 2. And really what we're providing today are some options. And a discussion of those options, a lot of them have been, you've really sort of hit on some of the key issues about equity, allocation principles, grants, fee programs. There aren't that many options, but you've already addressed about half of them and already had a pretty good discussion, but I will provide a little bit more flavor and a little bit more color on some of those. So a little bit of background about DTA. This is what we do. So I'm an attorney, but public finance specialist. Lots of municipal bonds, lots of fee programs, lots of experience in the Central Coast, Slo County, Slo City, Atascadero, lots of CSDs. And a lot of different kinds of services and infrastructure in this area as well, including fee programs, police, fire. None quite as unique as basin management, and that's something that is going to sort of we're going to talk about here very quickly. So, I'm starting with sort of obviously why we're all here and why I'm here, and this intersection between the revenues required to sort of keep the BMC functioning, the annual reporting obligations, the monitoring obligations,
And some of the costs, some of those very, very large but very, very real costs outlined in the basin plan. And unfortunately, there is not a perfect tool that to attack that sort of works simultaneously for both. And so there are going to have to be some considerations and some thoughts and decisions made, perhaps, or perhaps some combinations and hybridizations of how we attack sort of the revenues for these discussions and that monitoring, and perhaps in the future, Program A, Program C, and some of the reinvestment program. So continue. So starting with the problem, the way we've sort of framed it, and this is just for purposes, I'm a finance guy, for purposes of the financing report, is that we tried to look at it as for sort of three scenarios. These aren't the only three scenarios, far from it. The permutations are infinite. This was really to sort of help us provide some crystal clear options. And if we were going to sort of do scenario one but stop, is there a decision? Is there a path that makes sense? If we were going to do scenario two and perhaps scenario three. Perhaps, you know, scenario three, perhaps it might be a moonshot. It's a little bit more expansive. Scenario one, you know, sort of we keep moving forward. So, and then in our report, we obviously outlined some feasibility rankings with the problem. I like to provide some of the conclusions. We'll work back to some of this. Unfortunately, the acronyms are very, very similar for a lot of these programs, FCD, CFD. That wasn't my intent. An FCD special tax is a flood control district special tax. A CFD is a community facilities district special tax, otherwise known as a Mello-Roos tax. They function very similarly in some regards. In other regards, they do not. But we wanted to sort of provide, to see that there's a lot of overlap, whether we pursue scenario one, which would be sort of a general implementation and operations and maintenance of services, let's keep moving scenario, versus scenarios two and scenarios three, which might be a little bit more focused on some of the infrastructure to address some of that seawater infiltration. We've outlined, you know, some recommended mechanisms, recommended entities, and we're going to discuss all of this. It is in the report as well. We didn't include anything that we thought that might be a little bit too speculative at this time. We understand grants are critical to go after, absolutely important. I'm very reticent to back that out of the costs until they're received, because that's just public finance 101. Don't back it out of the cost until you got it. Same with the fee program. I think a lot of members of the audience noted when you develop a fee program, it's a pay-as-you-go mechanism. You need the development to pay the fee, and you only collect the fee as you go. It can be hard to get a critical mass, and that is a theme very common in public finance generally. So that was a bit of a conclusion. Let's talk about some of the entities. And this is what I think I struggled with at the outset, was where do we sort of cite this authority? Because the authority is somewhat related to the entity, but it's not always. For instance, a lot of these entities here, you can overlay a taxing district that has coterminous boundaries, but that's not the same thing. So there's a lot of thorny issues that we've been working through with County Council. Erica, it's been phenomenal. You guys are very, very lucky. And so we sort of tried to distill it into some sort of easy-to-digest pros and cons of each of them. The County Flood Control District, as you can see, would sort of be the broadest probably the most prepared to take a deep dive. The CSD itself, probably a little bit more of a special purpose entity, obviously. And then Joint Powers Authority, which we would have to generate and create, might give us some of the special purpose benefits of the CSD with some of the expansive capabilities of the county. But there's costs associated with that. These are, again, just some of the pros and cons. And there are more. Happy to stand for any more questions, asking for specificity about these later. But related to those entities are some statutory problems that we face. And this is just within these financing mechanisms, within the government code, where do we fit the general implementation of that $300,000? Again, this is, we're just sort of calling it that, an annual budget number, versus some of the capital facilities that are identified in the basin plan. They don't fit as neatly as we would have hoped, and part of that is because a lot of these financing programs were developed pre-Sigma, pre-Basin Plan issues, pre-Coastal Commission. The special assessment law that we're talking about is both the 1913 and the 1915 Act. As an attorney, I firmly believe that the intent was to help communities finance these things, but it's not there. And because it's not there, that gives, and rightly so, that gives council and any future council, bond council, it would give them pause to proceed when you don't actually have specific authorization. I'm an expansive guy, financing, I love bonds, I really do, don't get me wrong, but if we don't have specific statutory authority, I cannot recommend that you dive into that. That can be very, without further investigation. So that's something that we struggle with. You know, facilities tend to be easier. Financing of the facilities, believe it or not. I know that sounds a little bit foreign to folks. Typically in California, anything with a useful life of more than 5 years, you can finance through one of the mechanisms we're going to address. Services, and I use that term very broadly. We refer to it as general implementation here and in the report. Think of things like operations and maintenance, administrative components. It is very broad here. It's absolutely critical. But it has sort of different set of statutory authorizations. And unfortunately, we don't fall within some of the typical ones that we use. And those would be in the CFD Act. Folks probably a lot familiar with the Mello-Roos Act, for better and for worse. It is a very flexible act. It's an incredible tool. But there is no specific authorization, statutory authorization for that. So a bit of a problem. So additional challenges, and these may be a bit premature, but these are things I always like to share in my experience going through these discussions and these finance reports and these voting processes, because, you know, sort of the end game, as Carolyn addressed, May 2017, working back from that, is, you know, perhaps we develop a strategy and we go to a vote and there's outreach. I think people were talking about community outreach. It's very critical to any of these, of course. But just in my experience, administration, what does that mean? And so I think Rob and the reporting requirements, I mean, and the monitoring requirements are so far beyond what folks generally sort of poo-poo as administrative when we do these bond issuances, because they think, oh, that's going to copy paper and long-distance phone calls. That's obviously now what's happening here. But it is a concern. The vote thresholds. Just with a bullet, I'm going to adjust these a little bit. So two of the mechanisms require a two-thirds vote. One of them requires a 50% vote. That's the worst mechanism, unfortunately. So we're sort of stuck. As you can see, the first two are two-thirds of registered voters. The final one is 50% of property owners. That's a pretty important distinction, how that plays out anytime you pursue any one of these larger community-wide financing mechanisms. So. And anytime votes are tough, multiple votes are even tougher. Just something to sort of keep in the back of everyone's mind. Moving forward with some of the more specific options, both CFD and FCD. Starting with a community facilities district, the CFD option. This is, I think on the feasibility rankings, we listed it as perhaps the best at financing infrastructure. And the second best at financing general implementation. Now, sort of this would not be the best option to sort of get us over that first hurdle, but perhaps if we were trying to accommodate the tens of millions of dollars outlined in the basin plan, this might be a better future possibility. We've outlined some numbers based upon the current demographics and land uses here. These are not specific charges. These are annual charges. I am not putting these on your tax bills right now. These have not been decided, reviewed. But they have been reviewed. But these were really for to sort of ground some of the bond math. I wanted to give people a sense of how far could we get. I mean, obviously, you have 5,000 parcels. You charge 4,000 of the homes a certain amount. There's an incredible benefit in aggregating that and securitizing that at tax-exempt interest rates. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of color, you know, about what $100 a home could get you. This isn't meant to be that this is the plan and this is what's being voted on. So, lights. And then, did the pros and cons get slashed off of this one? Oh, no. The pros of a CFD, a little bit more revenue potential. If you're trying to get tens and tens of millions of dollars, probably a little bit better of a mechanism. Firmly believe that both this and the flood control district can accommodate a lot of the allocation principles in the basin plan. Sort of existing folks, a little bit of a true up, and then we'll sort of discuss future folks as the need arises. The con would be that general implementation issue, that statutory authorization. So we sort of perhaps ignore our current immediate need while going for a moonshot. I don't know if that helps, but I just wanted to sort of throw that out there as one of the wrinkles that we're facing. And then that would be the key con. The better fit for the now is the flood control district special tax. And I say tax, and that's a very important word, and you guys are going to get really, really tired of people like me saying this in the future. There's a big difference between a tax and an assessment. You guys may be familiar with this. You get a lot more flexibility with the tax, but in essence, you're trading that flexibility for a higher vote threshold. And this is all because of Prop 13, 1978. I'm sure everyone remembers very fondly. For that flexibility, you now have to get a two-thirds vote instead of a 50% vote. However, a flood control district tax really does give it. We do have statutory authorization to pursue that general implementation. It is much broader for the now. It gives us a lot more options now. We've provided an annual amount. Again, this isn't final. This is just a general sort of conceptual framework. We think it might be about $50 per parcel within the current basin plan boundaries to get you to that general implementation target of about $300,000. The pros is listed, the statutory flexibility. The cons, again, two-thirds vote, as we had with the CFD. Not as good at financing infrastructure. And we can talk about that in a little bit more detail, but unfortunately, any hybrid of these two would require perhaps two votes. So I've been trying to think about ways of potentially doing that. That investigation is ongoing, but unfortunately, each has its pros, but each option does have its cons. Now, moving from the tax piece that we discussed, that sort of two-thirds vote, we get all that flexibility, we get those options, but we do have to get two-thirds of vote. An assessment, the dollars and cents, we can approximate them. We can get to the same point. The problem is because I'm going to use the word that Erica will love, no one else will do. The jurisprudence, the law associated with assessments in California is batty. I'm an attorney. I do this. I give speeches on this. It is all over the place. It can work, and it does. It also, you end up in court a lot. And the reason for this is because an assessment under California law, Prop 218, which was passed in 1996, you have to allocate general versus special benefit. I do this every day. I'm on the record, but it is maddening. And the way you do this. And for instance, what might be a good example? If you're building a road, how many people do we think within the community are going to use that road? And how many people in that community that we're taxing versus, say, people who are going through the community and bypassing it, people who are using the road to access neighboring communities? And so that would be part of that benefit allocation between people within the community and people without. And that is a very, very tricky process because every time we think we have a hold on it, the courts change their mind. And so there's a legal concern and there's an allocation concern because all of the benefit inuring to the basin, it benefits a lot of people. And how we quantify that is going to be would be a bit of an adventure. And I'm not saying it can't be done. And in exchange, you get a lovely 50% vote threshold. But it does present some legal challenges. Additionally, we have a similar statutory authorization issue. It's a little fuzzier, but I would love to recommend any program that allows you guys to go with a 50% plus one vote. Folks are moving away from these. They're really tough and really burdensome on the legal team. The benefit area fee program. This was version alternative 4, I believe, from what we just saw, or was it alternative 3? I wrote this down. This would be the fee on new development. This was 4? Okay. I think everyone in the room has a pretty good handle on this. There were some comments, but you're absolutely right. It is tricky because it's a pay-as-you-go mechanism. We're asking people to fund their fair share of infrastructure, but then we're waiting until we get enough of them to get enough to actually do it. That being said, this is pretty standard in California, and I think this has to be a component of what you do in the future if you do this. If there is new development, I think this has to be a part of it. Is it going to get you the money that you need to do A, to do C, to do the reinvestment program? I don't think so. I would love if it did, but It has to, we're cobbling together things here. I don't have any one solution that fixes everything, but you see the pros, focus only on future development. The cons, focus only on future development. So we have a timing issue, we have a revenue issue. The equity issue, actually, this would be able to reflect the allocation principles, the future scenario, the future population as well. So I don't think this helps in the now, just like grants that haven't been secured don't necessarily help. But it is important to keep in the back of our minds moving forward. And, it's just one of the – if the longer you miss it, you're just missing sort of the bite at the apple, and the apple gets smaller and smaller. So grants, we discussed grants. My firm has a lot of experience, a lot of background in grant writing as well. It is tricky. It is – you go through the multiple rounds. It's a bit of a beauty contest. There is some lobbying that has to be done at the state, conversations with the DWR folks. It is tough. I mean, you guys are on top of that. But I would not account for it until it's in hand. So that was a lot of information about a lot of different programs. Some we'd already discussed. But the recommendations, and sort of just wanted to, really to sum it all up, was this distinction between general implementation and the capital facility big ticket items of the basin plan. And unfortunately, it's hard to sort of tackle both seamlessly. They can both be tackled, but it's difficult to do it in an absolute optimal way for each one. And so there becomes a discussion and a decision that needs to be made. Our recommendation is that based on the basin plan, based upon the expediency and the needs now, I think you do, the first thing has to be a flood control district special tax that sort of, so we can at least keep having these conversations. Alternatively, if you're going for that moonshot in the future, I think the CFD is going to give you more flexibility, more revenue potential associated with that. It still presents the issue with the general implementation, with the annual administrative costs. I will say that the larger a program becomes, focuses tend to shift, but that would be something that would have to be signed off on by a bond council. And then if new development resumes, and sounds like I think a benefit area fee program would be critical. There is a fair share allocation study, it's called a Nexus study, that is done at the time you create the fee program. You look at the projected costs that are sort of going to be necessitated by the new development. You look at their ability to pay. You look at what equity demands and affords you, and you try to come up with a fee, a one-time fee, again, paid a building permit that can accommodate that. But I will say I've seen a lot of communities use impact fees and connection fees, certainly timed, interestingly, as potential inducements to either develop or to develop in a certain way. And so I think that's very, very important, because with the fee becomes obviously a monetary obligation, but it also becomes an ability to perhaps a negotiation point with someone who may have more than 10 units or 20 units. Typically, fee programs, we're talking in the 100 unit or the 1,000 unit, but it would go in effect, and it would have some ability moving forward to defray some of your costs. So. A lot of acronyms, a lot of dollars. All of the dollars are purely conceptual, purely for framework discussions. Again, the flood control district special tax, it was about $50 per parcel. It was roughly estimated based upon the data we were provided, whereas the CFD tax was structured anywhere from around $100 per home. Ability to pay, considerations like that, very widely. Everyone seems to have a different perspective on what is an appropriate amount. As you move into this process and you pursue that outreach, that's something that you discuss, and it becomes a point of discussion and negotiation, and you obviously want folks to be excited about a program that's going to fix some serious issues that you have, so you wanted to develop the price point with that in mind, because we obviously would want this all to pass. So, questions?
Yeah. Do we have any questions before we go to public comment here?
Let me start, if I might, Mr. Chairman. Not necessarily your on your list of things to do each week, but has anybody been tracking any potential legislative fixes on this, expanding the CSD? You know, we know that going into SGMA, financing the management of basins is going to be challenging. Mm-hmm. Prop 218 and all the consequences. It would seem to me, though, that we've, in at least in two other basins that I know, we know we have general implementation costs that are going to be ongoing because monitoring for mm-hmm. if nothing else is going to be there. So I'm wondering, do we have any sense that the legislature is looking to make that easier under a CFD?
Not specifically with regard, in my experience, and yeah. that may be the case, not with regard to sort of the general implementation. I do know the definition of facilities has been expanding recently, and the definition of sort of authorized services tends to track right. that.
Okay.
And so as facilities, more and more facilities come online, we've seen a lot of facilities in the green energy space, retrofits, which again, of course, you should be able to finance, but we're not statutorily authorized. Those have been added to certain legislations. The services related to those have been added. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I don't know if it's going to happen before May 2017 or the next legislative cycle.
Okay. But. All right. Thank you.
Any other?
Unless you know good lobbyists. Who's
we do. We have the best. So, you know, but like I say, this has got to be an issue statewide.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether there are, I think your word was expansive ways of interpreting what it takes to operate a facility, mm-hmm. which is presumably allowable under a CFD, mm-hmm. And maybe we can restructure some of the facilities here to you know, suitably. But as you may well be aware, we've got four different entities sitting at this table organized under four completely different principles.
I do.
And
I do,
so
yes.
that's a, yeah, and more spice for the stew, I guess.
Right. Well, that has to do with the JPA, too.
We are heading in the right direction with respect to authorization, but for you guys, we're not there right now.
Okay. Well, if we don't have any other questions, we'll go to public comment, and then if you guys could stick around.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to say this in all honesty. This is the third meeting I've attended today to discuss this exact same issue as public financing, so I'm kind of burned out myself on this subject today.
Lou Tornotsky, Los Osos. I'm also a member of the CSD. But I speak in my own point of view. This report was extremely disappointing to me. I picked it up after it was sent to me and so on, and there are 17 pages. It's all about different ways to get the money we need from the ratepayers and pretty much no one else. That has problems for me because there's a lot of entities that were involved in this long, torturous path we've had over the last 20 years. There are things called grants. There's a federal government, which the people who wrote the thing may not be familiar with. And they mention one state program, Prop 1, but that was all combined to the last half a page out of a 17-page rant. It is possible to get grant money from the federal government. In fact, the U.S. federal government is the largest source of science and technology grants in the world. But you have to sort of know something about how to approach them, who should be approached, which agencies or entities or programs within agencies are in our space. You can find it. You can dig. I spent 25 years doing that. I personally have raised probably $15 to $20 million in a prior life. This was a real disappointment to me. Now, I don't know how this came to pass. I was in another venue in the Globe when this was sort of funded, I believe. So I think we could look, in addition to this one approach, to other ways to fund what needs to be funded. Now, diversify funding sources, I believe in it. If you have five or six things going that may hit, probability speaking, you're going to hit them. Then you're going to hit them. Then you're going to hit them. There's a way that broadens the opportunities of how we fund what needs to be funded in our community. Thanks.
Thank you. Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Again, Jeff Edwards. I'd like to thank the gentlemen for their work and the report. Unfortunately, it just points out that the special tax is not a good fit for our community. Moreover, what we're trying to do, at least immediately, is fund the administration of this operation, of this Basin Management Committee. It's my recollection that in the not too distant past, the County of San Luis Obispo, the Flood Control District, loaned this community $8 million for the wastewater project. I'm thinking maybe we could go to the Flood Control District and ask them to loan us a little bit more. By the way, we paid the $8 million back. If the Flood Control District loaned us $1 million, that would fund the administration of this group for 3 years. Within 3 years, we should be able to figure it out. We cannot pursue a special tax just to fund the administration. That's ludicrous. Additionally, we've heard about the Community Facilities District and so forth, and they have limitations, clearly. Not just the voter threshold, but the cost of the money, reserves. I don't know if you looked at the net proceeds, but the net isn't, you take 20% off the top and that's what you net. Also, the idea of repaying the urban water retrofit program is ridiculous. Why would we pay back $18.3 million to ourselves, in effect? That doesn't make any sense. So the whole idea of $30+ million, that's not realistic. It's not accurate. We've talked about this before. I think for $15 million, we can do just about everything we need to do. And we can round that money up in a variety of ways, none of which include a special tax. I have a question. Are we still a disadvantaged community in the context of grant pursuits? I'm not sure if we still are. We were in the past.
Part of the community.
Part of the community, yes, okay.
Answer questions at the end.
I think we really need to, while the work is well done, the results, again, are not a good fit for our community. I think we can... And as the document does indicate, through special fees, you can raise money. Through rates, through the purveyor's own rate structure, you can raise money. Golden State has rate cases before the PUC pending. The LOCSD has a rate increase that began July 1st to raise $5 million over 4 years. So let's use the money we have. No special tax. Thanks.
Thank you. And he was right on his 3 minutes, huh, Dan? He was right on his 3 minutes.
Lynette Tornatsky.
Thank you.
I thought the report was excellent. I thought it really, just outlined everything for the normal person to be able to read and try and figure out what's coming ahead. But I also... in listening to the comments today, Bill Garfinkel came up with something really important, and we are an unknown. This group is an unknown. Most people don't know anything about it. There has to be a huge amount of outreach done, whatever you decide to do on all of this stuff. I mean, I read this whole report, and I don't know if other people will bother to read it or not, but it's true. There was only two paragraphs. Is there no other way to get money? And I agree that we can never overpromise and underdeliver. We have to anyway, it's just when I heard the comment from the woman who came up and said, well, we're being asked to conserve, we're paying more money, and now you're talking about more people coming in here and building, I think you really need to get out ahead of this and get some PR going and separate the two things from just saving our water supply. That is one thing, and we need to do it. But the other thing is the growth. Let's not confuse those two things, because I think people are going to be really upset if it comes across that way. I'm concerned about the basin boundary thing coming up, that there may be some snags there. I think the thing you need to do is whatever grants, whatever money things you're pursuing that means that we, the ratepayer, don't have to pay it, you need to get that out there and publicize every single thing you're doing on that. So if it comes down to us having to pay for it, we know you guys did every possible thing to try and knock that amount of money down, so we're not paying for it. So it's really just PR to show what you're doing with grants, and please find some other thing other than Prop 1, because I think we all remember Lois Capps and her valiant effort to get us money, and it didn't work. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen, I was looking at it. This is based on, what, 6,000 properties? Basically, to get the $50 for the flood control district tax. I was wondering, is this covering all water users in the basin?
Lindy, questions will be answered at the end.
Okay, sorry. Is it covering all water users in the basin? That's one of my questions. I also, the $300,000 for admin is one tax that we'll be asking people for, and I agree there has to be some more outreach and some we're all in this together kind of kumbaya direction to get people to, you know, be willing. If you need two-thirds of the community to vote, we're going to need more information out there. Again, implementing the millions of dollars of upgrades is all coming from the water purveyors. Is that, I think there's a distinction there that I don't quite get. If $300,000 is for admin, or is it for all the studies that then allow each purveyor to begin the implementation of the improvements that we're going to be making to save our basin? And then the other question was the 500 undeveloped properties, which Mr. Gibson had said would be having a 218 vote by the time the sewer came on board. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. Are they also part of the 6,000 people, even if they're undeveloped? Thank you.
Thank you.
Patrick McGibney, Baywood Park. So I had a question for the DTA associates, which I guess you'll answer afterwards, but I'm a little confused on the 218 two-thirds vote approval, or is it a disapproval? Is tax or an assessment, are those treated differently? A lot of times when the CSD has us do a 218 vote, it's not really an approval, it's a disapproval. So those people that don't agree to it, you have to send in your APN number and make a comment on why you don't approve and things like that. So it's not like you're putting the burden on the people to be showing that they don't want it, as opposed to people that do want it sending in. So I'd like to see how that works, or tell me how that works. And I agree with Mrs. Dronowski here that we do need to be showing the community, the ratepayers, that the BCM is doing, or BMC, excuse me, is doing everything you can to help save the basin. You know, we still don't have any funding for retrofits for our septic tanks for recycling purposes into holding tanks for water. That's been going on for months and months, and I think the postcard that was sent out said something if there was approval of funding. Well, you have, you know, still $2.8 million or thereabouts for doing this, so I don't know what the holdup is. You know, and if you want the community to be supporting a special tax, you have to be showing us that you're doing everything you can and helping us save the basin. One of the questions that was asked here today also is about, are we really trying to save our basin? I mean, doing all the things that we're doing for, you know, showers and outdoor watering and lawns going dead and stuff like that. Are we doing that to help save our basin? Are we doing it so we can have future growth? And I asked actually Supervisor Gibson this several years ago at a town hall meeting that we had, and his answer was basically both. Well, that's not really an answer. You know, so, I mean, if we're saving the basin and we can show through metrics, whether it's chloride or water levels or whatever like that, that yes, we have not only stopped seawater intrusion but reversed it, then we can start talking about having growth. But I think all this conversation about having growth is giving the wrong impression to the community, for one thing, and not really supporting the community that lives here now, you know, that's paying all these taxes and trying to get this thing together. So I just think you should be thinking about how you're wording things and in what order you're going to be, you know, saving the basin or future development. So let's work on saving the basin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson. I'd like some more information from the consultant about the table 2A, the land use assumptions. I take it single family units must include mobile homes. Maybe it doesn't. Develop non-residential acres, though. That's the one that I want an explanation of, because if you take that 753 number and go back to table 2C and start multiplying it by some of those fees, we're talking under scenario 2, $364 an acre times 753 acres is almost $280,000. Scenario 3, that's annually. Scenario 3, it jumps up to $1,190 an acre. I think the people in possession of those 753 acres might be interested in some further information on that. And then I'm going to follow up on what Jeff said. Has there been any discussion of dividing the future costs based on the percentages of how the vote is for the Basin Management Committee and having those added to rates and charges? 33% or 38% of the total costs the CSD adds into a new rate structure. Golden State, I know, has to go through the PUC, and you know, the 4% that, and then you know, the county, they'll have to figure out where they get the money. I just wonder if that's been discussed and if that would be a longer process than this process or not, if it's even possible. It would have been nice to have had some of the additional information as to how some of the breakdowns were developed to come up with $100 versus $75 for multifamily. You know, what some of the theories were or assumptions were in these breakdowns of costs. I know they're only estimates at this time, but they did lead to some final numbers, or not final numbers, but total numbers as examples. It would have been nice to have had some of the background information added as an appendix or something. And I know this is only the initial steps, but I definitely would like some answers about table 2A and 2C.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back for answers to the questions. And then we'll come back with comments.
Can I go for it? Okay. I caught a couple questions, so if I miss any that you're hoping I've answered, let me know. I will say Nate's team had wanted to look into the grants a little bit more and proceed with more depth on that, but knowing that the BMC was already funding separate efforts to look into grants, and knowing that there's also the IRWM opportunities and comprehensive summaries of grants available. We didn't pursue that. So it's definitely something that I think this basin should look into, federal, state, and otherwise, but just didn't think it was necessarily needed in this funding study. Certainly those could offset costs, as I think Nate pointed out several times in his presentation. Let's see, the urban water reinvestment, that's really a redistribution of costs amongst some of the other parcels that weren't already paying for those costs. So it might offset some of the costs of current rates being covered by parcels within the basin. Jeff also asked if this is a disadvantaged community. I think there may be some census tracts that are considered disadvantaged, but I don't think the community as a whole meets the state's criteria of disadvantage at this time. That could change as they do future census data. Some of the other big ones, certainly I think PR will be important, as would be true of any other funding mechanism pursued as well. And I think I would imagine the BMC has already talked about this and probably will continue to do so in the future. But that's been a big discussion in a lot of other basins as well, as making sure people are educated and understand all that's being pursued. Let's see. As Nate pointed out, the parcel counts and the general cost distribution amongst some of the land use categories was really broad and is intended that in a phase two or a more detailed study of a single funding mechanism, we would dig into the details of all the parcels included, the specific land use, and all of that. I will note that there were no vacant properties included within the analysis on this. So we did take those out knowing that we weren't pursuing that future development in this study. And let's see, to Richard's questions. Again, I think I'd have to check to see if the mobile homes are included under the single family resident, not being in our planning and land use. I don't have that handy. They're not included. Okay, so those are not included. But could be. So certainly, so I think some of this feedback from the BMC as we decide which funding mechanism to pursue would be helpful. But at this point, it really was just provided to give some sort of a sense of cost breakdowns over time. I think those are the main points. But if you had anything else you wanted answered, we're here.
Do you have anything, Rob? Anything to add?
Two more, if I caught them. The 218 would be two-thirds approval. In this case, so everyone would be opting in to the program rather than a majority protest vote, which you see with a lot of regulatory fees as well. This would sort of be a very transparent democratic process of people opting in. Again, does not include mobile homes at this time or any undeveloped property, and that was sort of our desire to reflect the allocation principles in the basin plan. The broader, the more people you pull in, the lower the rates can go. That was something I pushed, but I think the allocation principles push back a little bit, and so we agreed on that. With respect to the charge per non-residential acreage, sort of the breakdown between scenario two, scenario three, it was roughly about 3x between the two. We were targeting a $100 charge and a $300 charge. Key to the single family, just based on our experience all over the state and what we thought might be palatable, because we do have to go out to a vote. Everything then sort of fell into place after that. The multifamily charge, you'll typically see anywhere between a 20 to 40% takedown for under sort of an equivalent dwelling unit or equivalent benefit unit analysis that you see a lot in hydrology, water, sewer studies. So it might be 0.6 or 0.8. of one single-family unit, we selected 0.75. It rounded nicely too. We thought, but again, that would be subject. But we do have a lot of flexibility when you call it a tax. And I think that was everything. I don't know if I missed anything else.
How about ag land?
The ag land is currently not included.
So, okay. Rob. Yeah. Did you have anything to add?
I did have one thing. I just wanted to make a clarification. And just because we have two items on our agenda that are back-to-back don't mean the two are interrelated. So what we were talking about in the previous discussion was input for the community plan, which has to address future growth. I mean, that's part of that plan. So we were discussing that in that context so we could give input to the county as they develop the community plan. What we're talking about now
is implementing groundwater measures for sustainability for the existing population. So they're two different contexts here. They just happen to be back-to-back. So they're not related other than we needed to give that input to Cary and eventually to the county. And then secondly, what we're looking at now is ways that we can finance to restrict the groundwater, the seawater intrusion to resolve the existing problem, not for future growth. Okay, so let me start with Bruce this time. I started with you twice, so we'll start with Bruce this time.
I would certainly yield to the distinguished gentleman from Golden State. But having been called on by the chair, I guess first question to Rob is what do you need from us today?
We want to bring back an item for action at some point. So we were hoping that this is the first time the community's seen the analysis that was done. It's obvious that the big issue before us is whether we go for an administratively focused flood control district tax. That's really the what we'll be bringing back for action.
As a first step,
or do you take a bigger
bite? Or go with a more comprehensive, whether it's a moonshot or whether it's just simply a more comprehensive view of what we should go out for in the first place. You know, to be honest, I think I'm going to need some offline meetings with some of our staff and maybe Taussig and Associates just to understand some of the hurdles that you referenced in your analysis here before I really have a clear sense of how we should go. For instance, we managed to secure the financial commitment on the wastewater project with a special benefit, and I think you may well have been the consultants on that, but it we did assess general and special benefits. We got that squared up. It passed by an 80% vote, and it is also a framework where we can deal with undeveloped properties at an appropriate point when, I mean, it's one way we could deal with undeveloped properties at an appropriate point when we move forward. So one thing I need to understand is a little more the detail of why we can't get there from here in terms of special benefit, because basically I see what we've got. Setting aside the 300,000-ish operating budget, we have infrastructure that we're funding here, basically, in this plant, a certain amount of programs. I do think a couple of things that we should note about the analysis. It didn't include the ag land, and that is largely land that's outside the boundaries of the water purveyors. It's within the county. It's one reason that I'm sitting here at the table among a couple of other ones. And so I think in terms of spreading benefit, if we think in general of an equitable distribution of the costs of running this program, we do need to consider the benefit, the benefit accruing to those overliers in the basin that are outside water purveyors. So that's a piece that I'd like to discuss further. I did notice in your analysis of the bonded indebtedness that you're assuming a 5.5% or 5% bond rate. And again, drawing on the experience from the wastewater project, we managed to finance the loans on that through the USDA and the state revolving fund at 2% and 2.6% with some possible opportunity to go lower, but maybe not. So understanding what different, and interest rates was always, in terms of assessing the cost of the sewer, was a big deal. We always made that clear that the cost of financing is major, and so that's gonna. So I'd like to assess that. I think two things bring in there. There was a question of disadvantage. The community of Los Osos was declared to be treated as a disadvantaged community for assessing the terms and interest rate of the state revolving fund loan. That was a special concession that we got from the state board. It is not a disadvantaged community in the traditional definition of it, but the cost of compliance with this for this wastewater project was so great that it was considered disadvantaged. We were eligible and did receive interest rates that were applicable to disadvantaged communities. So,
I get it that folks are looking to have this, you know, the needed infrastructure improvements paid by money that comes from outside the community. And that's a given. I mean, that's a given that as the county pursues financing plans for any infrastructure, we're going to go to the mat to try to get outside money into this deal. We were successful to the tune of over $20 million in the sewer. I think there's considerable opportunity here, but I think we also have to do the scenario, the worst-case scenario estimate here, and understand it for what it is. These are issues under SGMA that we're going to have to figure out how to pay for. It's a little bit like the sewer. If we don't figure it out, either the court or the state water board is going to come in and charge us and figure it out for us. And so we don't, you know, we're in another one of these unpleasant situations where we have to figure it out. So I think as we work forward to decide how best to pursue this, we've got to start in a parallel path, understanding our financing, or, you know, our other financing options besides letting a bond. I do know that we've been told by the state board that there should be money for SGMA compliance that's going to be coming forward as grants from the state. So let's, as we work on our issues here, let's figure this out. And finally, I think the thing I'd like to think a little bit further about is the question of this group forming as a JPA and what the implications of that are. In terms of our ability to finance, and I think it's not off the table to talk about legislative solutions. We're going to be in another leg session here at the first of the year. People know that financing SGMA issues are difficult, and I don't think we take that off the table. So that's my input to you at this point. And you know, I think we all have a lot more work to do to figure out where we need to go next.
Well, this is the introduction, so. Now, Bill?
Yes, I think divided into three scenarios, we have to be very cautious. Scenario one alone is completely unpalatable to the community. They don't want more administration, and they're not going to pay for it. So it has to be based on building infrastructure and solving the problem and not talking about the problem. So I would take emphasis off scenario one as a standalone. It may be have to use it in combination, or if we use it, it would have to be used in combination with a scenario two or scenario three program.
Mark?
Yeah, one of the disadvantages about going last is that most of it's been said, but well said, Bruce. I appreciate what you added there. But just in addition to that, you know, a lot of information here. Definitely need more time to digest it and go through it. But the bottom question really, you know, what's our next step today moving forward? How do we start attacking this beast and really really bringing it manageable? Would be probably the question to follow up after what's already been said.
That was it.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, no. Oh.
Well.
Like I said, this is the third meeting I've attended to discuss benefit area free programs and CFDs today. So I think that what Bill said is probably something appropriate. I mean, it's going to have to be incremental. There's, the moonshot, I don't like that phrase, but I understand where that's coming from. But I think we are going to have to educate the public as we move along through this process to make sure everybody understands exactly what we're doing. So it may have to be an incremental adaptation of these various procedures as we move through. But I think the thing that came out loud and clear, not only from the board but from the public, is we just have to do a really, really good job of communicating to the public of what's going on here. Not just from the tax point of view, but from just what we're doing and how we're handling this and managing it. So, we're at that critical point, I think, right now. There's some things that said, we have no money. I mean, we're being funded by the entities. So as far as, and I don't get mad at me, but the $2.8 million, I mean, that's not under our control at all. I mean, that's money that's in the county's wastewater project. So we have very, very limited funds. We're being funded by the four entities right now. But I think the communication is really, really critical as we move forward into this. So what we're trying to do today is just give broad direction to staff, and I don't know if you have any questions or you've got good enough direction, Rob.
We think we can huddle as individual staffs, and
well, I think
we appreciate your willingness to give initial input on something like this. It's very helpful.
Well, I think individual members of the committee will be having specific questions that we'll want to get answers to, or we'll want some feedback back and forth on that, too, as Bruce mentioned.
Could I add just one thing in terms of principle here? I think it'll help our communication immensely to make sure that we clearly identify those costs with balancing the basin under the current development level and exactly what the cost of accommodating new development is. I agree with Bill. There is a reasonable expectation of those with vacant parcels, as confirmed by the community plan, that they would have a chance to develop. And we have to make that opportunity available to them in an equitable fashion to the services we provide to new development. Impact fees are clear, and it's well understood that the undeveloped properties will pay their share of the sewer. They're going to have to pay their share of this. We just need to be extremely clear about what we need to do to serve existing development and what we think we need to do to serve what expansions on the books once we finalize the plan. So I think we can break that. The other thing is, and we didn't exactly talk about it, but we know that part of this plan in terms of the recycled is to spread the cost of the recycled water program to a basin-wide, to the outside the prohibition zone, because we know that efforts of the of recycling the tertiary treated water benefit the basin as a whole. It's not fair for the prohibition zone alone to pay for that, and part of that was going to be a redistribution of that that's going to affect the, you know, it's going to have an offsetting effect within the sewer project. So I think we need to have that in front of us to see exactly what that does to the cost of someone who's inside versus outside the prohibition zone.
I think that's a very, very good point that you raised about doing a separate physical analysis of what we need to have to balance the groundwater basin based on the existing development, and then what it would take to facilitate future development.
It's there, but we need
the information.
But we need to start talking in those terms.
Right. I think the information is available, but I think, for lack of a better term, to bifurcate it so we're talking about them separately rather than where people are now being confused that we're talking about them concurrently, I think would be very, very helpful. Okay. Yes, Bill, one line. You get the last word today.
One last thing. This was is phase one of the finance plan, so I would like to know what are we going to do next? Are we going to phase two, and what kind of time frame are we talking about?
I might take a quick crack at that, and Carolyn, you can back me up. But we wanted to do phase one to get some general direction because the dollars are fairly modest on what we spent for this plan. And the phase two implementation is much more detailed with a lot more dollars attached. So we want to get our direction very clear. And as we meet staff to staff and talk about administration, talk about implementation of actual projects, and what specific steps have to happen, we'll bring those back to you now that we've had the general discussion.
Okay, thank you. So we'll finish that item. Last but not least is 7C, which is the Water Conservation Program update, which I started to talk about when we were trying to buy time there.
So. My staff report will be brief, because if those of you had compared it to previous staff notes, we'll notice some remarkable similarities.
Date change.
Definitely the date did change. But we wanted to keep this in front of the committee because I know that at least feedback from our understanding of the district's financial situation is that it would be very difficult to bring timely funding to a very important task to facilitate some of the rebate programs that this committee considered in draft form back in April now. I know Golden State, from discussions with them, of course, would have to go through a pretty lengthy rate case process that takes a number of years in order to implement substantial funding for these types of programs. So we found ourselves in a challenging position of primarily needing a source of seed funding to make this happen. In previous meetings, there were some options discussed. We've had some follow-up discussions with county staff to try to flesh those concepts out, and would certainly defer a little bit to county staff and Bruce to you as to whether there, again, could be some availability of seed funding on the theory that the purveyors take an active leadership role here at this table in defining programs, in public advertising of those programs, and ultimately leaning on perhaps the county's experience and administrative skill in doing the nuts and bolts, the day-to-day that the county's been doing, but the leadership and the push comes from this table. And so, Bruce, I don't know if you have some follow-up thoughts.
Yeah, let me just outline a concept that I discussed with Rob about jump-starting a conservation, expanded conservation program that can extend outside. And it builds off things we've talked about at the table before. First and foremost, as Rob indicates, I think that the appropriate leaders of overall water conservation in this community are the water purveyors, working as partners with the county, and we can work in the area. We can work in the area outside your boundaries to the extent that that's helpful. We can also, I think, provide some seed from some seed money. And I've talked publicly about a couple of ideas. One of which was to float a loan out of the flood control district, some amount of money to get going out of the flood control district. But as I talked this through with Rob, one other piece of information has come, and that's specifically that we've finally received confirmation from appropriate Coastal Commission staff that we can utilize money in the budget of the wastewater treatment plant to do outside conservation without just simply by their declaring it so. We've had that confirmed. Now, in doing that, I think there's a basic, beyond the leadership of the water purveyors on the conservation program, there's a basic equity issue that as we go to a wider conservation effort, we are getting into benefits conferred on the entire basin that are funded only by ratepayers of the prohibition zone. And I think that that is a fundamental matter of equity that needs to be resolved at some point. But in an effort to get this thing going, the idea I floated with Rob is to, let's say, take $1 million of the available funds that are in the wastewater project budget. Let's get a memorandum of understanding together between the four entities party to this about what that money would be used for in terms of conservation rebates and other programs, with the understanding that an appropriate share of the benefit that accrues to parcels outside the prohibition zone would be reimbursed to the project at an appropriate point. And those are all very vague terms at this point. But the amount of reimbursement might not end up being huge. But I think as a matter of fairness to those who have gone the extra several miles in financing the wastewater project, I think we have to have that in place, that through some mechanism, whether it's eventual passage of a special tax, that the basin-wide benefits accruing by further conservation that's fronted by the money at the prohibition zone would be repaid. The other concept, I think, to keep it clean is that these rebates at this point would only be available inside the prohibition zone, so we don't risk any issue of spending these monies elsewhere where they aren't. And as I talked it through with Rob, in block form, I think we can get there. If it is to the pleasure of my colleagues at the table here,
I think the appropriate staff are willing to take on the next level of detailed analysis so we can move this forward.
Yeah, thanks Bruce. And maybe to bring some closure to this, so we believe with some input from Coastal Commission that's timely and that we do have a way forward here. And so what we'd bring back to your next meeting would be the draft programs that we already came up with for confirmation from the committee, as well as if we can, in the short amount of time that we have before the next meeting, come up with a draft MOA for consideration among the various staffs to see if we can kickstart this before all those tanks are decommissioned.
Okay. All right. Let's go to public comment, please.
We are going to have to end at 4:30, so.
Okay, that'd be great, because I've got...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, Jeff Edwards. And earlier in the meeting, I referenced the potential savings of additional water through conservation in the community. And I guess there was some question as to whether or not there is available savings. And so I'd like to direct your attention to the April 20th report from your executive director regarding a conservation program. And in looking at his table one for that program, I calculate anywhere from 250 to 300 acre feet of savings as potential. So I think the question really is, how do we achieve the savings, not whether or not they're there. And as I've mentioned before, I think we need to change the existing Title 19 program, convert it into the next generation water conservation program, make it basin-wide, not just PZ, not just outside PZ, basin-wide, keep it simple, don't use any public funds, keep it private, just like the existing Title 19 is. You can expand it from indoor to outdoor to include both, but use what you have. The county staff is set up. They've been used to processing the Title 19 certificates. They have an extensive database. Why would we reinvent the wheel? It doesn't make any sense to me. So, again, I think your committee ought to consider and direct staff to modify or propose modifications to the existing Title 19 ordinance. That's simple. Let's keep it simple. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen, I this issue of the county having the, what I understand is $2.4 million left in the conservation fund, and now that it's clarified that it can be used for outdoor, I've talked about having the recycled water transported to our homes, to our repurposed septic tanks, or you can install a tank on your property, 500-gallon tank. The estimate was that probably a 1,000-gallon septic tank could take care of outdoor watering, laundry, and you could plumb toilets with it. The question begins, how long will that cycle work before you're not putting enough liquid into the sewer and then you're bringing water from the sewer plant to flush it? I do not understand the proposal that the people outside the prohibition zone would get credits. Maybe I'm just not getting it, but we, inside the prohibition zone, we pay to process that water. We're paying to build the plant that processes the water. That water basically, technically, belongs to this community inside the prohibition zone, and I would request that it be brought back into tanks so that we can offset our basin use with an extra 1,000 gallons a month. The program needs to be set up. I'd ask you to start looking into how you would do it so that it's affordable. It needs to cost no more than the drinking supply, or we'll just keep wasting drinking supply. So if you could save one-third of the water that we use daily by repurposing that water that we are paying to treat, by getting it delivered to our homes, just like Crystal Springs brings your drinking water to your home, That's one of the best conservation efforts you could make, and I bet you could do it for under $500,000, $500,000. So I really come back to the people outside the prohibition haven't paid a penny that there's no pain in their lives for what's happening in our sewer. So I would like to see them contribute, yes, but us giving them money back, I don't understand what you're proposing. And I really think that we need to get a... I don't want to limit anybody to how much water they pump on their farmland, but there's a 20% known savings when people do have a meter on their wells because they become more aware and they become part of the issue of trying to save a basin. So I would urge that the county consider looking that direction too. And then, of course, we could share water with them.
Thank you, Linda. Time's up.
I wanted to also mention upper aquifer water that could
time,
be pumped.
I'm sorry, but time's up.
I heard you.
Okay, thank you.
Two things. The repurposing of septic tanks, Marshall, you mentioned it earlier. I do think there's a lapse in the information that's out there to the contractors and what they're putting forth to the homeowners. I don't know if anybody caught the Congleton show last week when he had an hour on talking about other issues in Los Osos, and he actually had a contractor from Bakersfield on who has done over 50, 60 lateral connections, and the subject came up about what are people doing with the tanks and stuff, and he was asked if he was, he had no clue. He said, well, you know, unless they're going to use it for something down the road, like maybe irrigation or something, there's really no purpose in us not backfilling it, and that's what we're doing at this point. We're backfilling it and covering it up. So it's not, I don't know, you know, another solution that shouldn't cost a lot of money. We need to go with the things that don't cost a lot of money to get information to people to save some water. You know, the cost benefit of putting another memo out to all the contractors through their email or whatever, or if, I don't know. It's just frustrating. It was real frustrating to hear that. I tried to call in, didn't get in time. And they seemed like a nice guy, but had no clue. My last comment is, I've said this numerous times at Board of Supervisors, I've said that numerous times at the CSD meetings. Why does it take so long in this community to get anything moved forward when it makes common sense? We have repeatedly, Keith Weimer, Chuck Cicina, Patrick McGivney, myself, others, repeatedly gone to the Board of Supervisors, to these meetings, talking about the conservation program. We're always told, no, can't happen. No, the money's not available. There's no nexus. We're not going to go down the route of contacting the Coastal Commission and going through a condition change. We heard today, they basically waved their hand, said, fine. Go do it. We see the nexus. We say it's good. Move ahead. Look how much time has been wasted because that effort wasn't implemented earlier on in the process. So now you're going to have $1 million, but you're behind the curve already. That money should have been available a long time ago. It was that easy. And we tried to tell them, contact the Coastal Commission.
Okay, time's up. Any other speakers? Chuck will be our last speaker.
Chuck Cicina, Los Osos resident. I want to read from one of the slides that was part of the presentation today, excerpt from Special Condition 2 regarding the Los Osos Wastewater Project Conservation Plan. The plan shall provide a process for evaluating septic systems for possible on-site reuse, including for on-site infiltration and percolation of stormwater to the degree feasible. The plan was to let the contractors bully the homeowners into whatever they wanted done. It's cheaper. Actually, it's more beneficial for the contractor to haul sand and slurry out. It costs the homeowner more to do that, so the contractor puts more in his pocket. That was the plan. What happened to the plan? No one got on-site evaluations of repurposing their septics. It was up to the homeowner to do it on their own, and most of them don't have a clue. You can't leave that to the contractors. And you know why? It was over a year ago. We said you won't need an immaterial amendment. Just ask. That was over a year ago. It's $80. I spent $80 on a siphon pump at Ace. Now, everybody's yard is different. It was pretty easy for me to run my downspouts over to the septic tank. So I bet for $100, counting materials, I now have a 1,000-gallon, 1,200-gallon rainwater system that I can use to irrigate my yard if it ever rains again. Actually, I've been using the water that I sanitize the tank with. Chlorine blows off a couple days. I've been watering my yard with that water we use to sanitize the tank. It's not rocket science, and I think you'll save me more money off my water bill by spending that money on conservation rebates than you will on my sewer bill, because for every $1 million saved, I'm getting a dollar back in my pocket. I'll save more than that in my water bill. It's not hard to do, but you can't leave it to the contractors. They're going to take the easy way out. The homeowners are confused by it all. There's so much information out there. It's just not that hard. The plan shall include a process for evaluating. It just never happened.
Thank you. Do you want us? I'll give you last speaker, though.
Patrick McGibney. Marshall, you had said about the special tax and everything about educating the community, you know, so you can get support and stuff like that. Well, you know, I think we're screwed on that because we haven't been able to educate the community about repurposing. So how are you going to be able to educate the community about why we need a special tax? The information that Coastal Commission has given the county now has been available for, as Chuck said, for a year. The Sierra Club got that information months and months and months ago that we didn't need to have an addendum to the condition to be able to use, you know, money for outdoor water or outdoor repurposing. So why has it been taking so long? What's the holdback here? You know, in $1 million, we've got 2.4, 2.8 that's available there. Let's put it to use. And Lindy Owen's idea about, you know, using the recycled water for the community, that's a great idea, you know. So let's start thinking about that, too, and how we can get that implemented. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. I think we gave Rob some good direction. I don't know if we need any, if we have any other discussion. Okay, seeing none, then we'll adjourn until, when's our next meeting? Oh, general public comment, pardon me. If you could be brief, because we do have to get out of here, so.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be very brief. My name is Jeff Edwards. And some of the wastewater project financing was discussed a little bit earlier. And just by way of clarification, we have a USDA loan for about $90 million. The rate's actually 3.25% over 40 years, sorry. And then we have a second with the state revolving fund that is 2% for $69 million. And it's a 30-year amortization. What I wanted to mention to your board today, I asked for your committee to take action on the matter I'm going to relate to you, similar to what you did with the boundary adjustment. On July 11th, the State Water Board rejected our request for an interest rate reduction from 2% to something lower on the $69 million. And I think given that the water and the wastewater are interrelated, I think it's important for this committee to take a position and encourage the State Board to reconsider the interest rate reduction request that we made. Just to give you a sense of it, if the Water Board were to reduce the interest rate on the $69 million by 1%,
That would equate to about $11 million over the life of the loan. That's just the kind of money we need to help defray some of these water issues. So again, I think it's important for your group to take a position either individually as water purveyors and the county and so forth, or as a collective body. But please send a letter into the State Water Resources Board regarding our SRF interest rate. They had a one-page rejection letter. It was very unfortunate. No hearings. They've said they've closed the case. But I think with enough pressure, they may be able to reopen it. And it's significant because it will help us defray our water expenses. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chuck Cicinio, one last question. I forgot this. Anyone from the county have an update on the percentage of septic tanks that are being repurposed? I know initially it was 22% of the permits being pulled included a repurposing component. Is there an update on that? Are we getting that number up there with the postcards, the media efforts, or is it falling? Thank you.
Lindy again. I didn't get a chance to speak about the upper aquifer water, which I would like to have an analysis of how long that water could be available if we were pumping it up and repurposing septic tanks with it. Right now we're using drinking supply and bleach to repurpose, and I think that's just ridiculous. There are locations to get upper aquifer water, and you need to consider it because that water is being wasted while we sit here and worry about saving the lower basin. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other? Okay, now I'll close public comment. Before we adjourn, does anybody have an update on the repurposing amounts? So, we'll bring that back. So, our next meeting, now I had a chance to look it up. It's August 17th at 1:30, the same location. All right, so we'll be adjourned till then. Thank you.